and replacing it by removing all siding and replacing it with hardy plank, correct? Isn't that drastic enough to implement the new guidelines?
I believe that there might actually be hardy on there currently. Let me get this.
Correct. So my concern is rhythm of the solid to void ratio. If you look,
that's
a little.
Same.
Stark.
It might just be these up top here. You could zoom in.
I mean, so certainly it's a material change. So if we look at it as a material change, therefore, do we need to implement all of the guidelines, including solid to void ratio? That's my question. I don't know. Every meeting I learn more.
I don't believe so, only because with non-contributing, it seemed that everything fit, but with...
I have a concern, obviously a visual compatibility concern, because there are no openings.
All right.
I mean, I would say that if you think about trying, forcing someone to put new openings in an existing building like that, where they might have kitchen or like making them change their whole building that already exists isn't really.
Well, they submitted a floor plan and it doesn't look like it's, yes, I am asking that. I would recommend for this building to be more visually compatible to have
openings.
And so that's my question. What percentage of change
there is creates, percentage.
Yeah. Is there a threshold?
No.
So we
can't force someone to do something that they're not asking us to do.
Even though it's not visually compatible.
Yeah, it's already like that.
It is, but they're changing all the siding. And that's the difference. If they didn't do anything to it, I wouldn't ask them.
Yeah.
But now they're changing it. And so that was my question.
Yeah. In my professional opinion, you can't force them to change it.
Is there a percentage of alteration before it starts addressing the standards?
No.
I mean, that we need to look into, because we are having that come up
again. I mean, could you make someone put openings in their home? I don't know.
It's not putting openings, it's making the building visually compatible.
Well, I understand.
And so like for code, if you do 50% of the value of the building, you have to put it to today's code versus yesterday's code.
Right.
So that's why I'm asking.
Yeah.
Can we hold this to today's guidelines versus when it was constructed in 2015 or whenever it was constructed? I can't remember. Or if it said that it was just an item for discussion. I don't know. That's why I'm asking it in the pre-meeting.
We cannot. Yeah.
Okay.
Right. As it stands right now. No. Sorry. Were you about to say something?
I was going to say pretty much the same thing.
Okay. So.
Can I ask one more question?
Yeah.
What constitutes a bedroom versus an office and study?
Was it usually a closet?
That's what you say?
That's not.
All right. I don't know.
Anything else for this one?
I have a question, not concerning that, but concerning down in the notices, proclamations, and acknowledgments. when you get down to 28, 29, and 30, these are all things that are not in compliance with some of, one of them doesn't have a COA or exceeds the COA. The others, one doesn't have a variance. The other 10 or 12 are not, are working, but not following their COAs. What's being done?
Yes.
Do they just float away? I mean,
code compliance is working with them.
There's no stop work orders on these buildings?
It all depends on the project, but code compliance doesn't, you all don't do stop work orders, right? That's the building department. Yeah, building department does stop work orders. Code compliance doesn't do stop work orders. Stop work orders are a life safety issue, not a code compliance issue.
So are we following up on these?
We usually do. Yep, we check every month.
I mean, before they get finished?
Well, sometimes there's nothing we can do. They get finished before, I mean, we report it or somebody reports it and they finish before anybody stops them. Or they just keep going anyway. And we actually happen to have a code compliance officer here because he's here for something else. So.
Okay.
I've got one other question, Leah, and I know this doesn't, we don't make the decision on parking by any means. I understand that, but there was a letter in the petition for 32nd and Habersham Street, a public comment letter.
Yes.
That was included in
the one about
the
parking.
Petition around about yeah. parking. Mm-hmm. It just amazes me that no parking is required. And so,
I
don't even know how to respond to the letter writer,
right?
The concerned neighbor,
mm-hmm.
Because parking will be. Everybody knows parking's going to be an issue.
I think I don't know if parking's not required for them. I don't know if they have a remote parking agreement, maybe. I don't know why parking wouldn't be required. They obviously aren't providing any on site.
Right.
But I don't know why and if there wouldn't be any required.
So parking. To address the neighbor's concern, we just direct them to traffic engineering or City of Savannah?
That's site plan review. And that would be the site plan review department.
Actually, the parking requirements have been altered in that neighborhood to where being required to have parking is very minimal, and is having a tremendous impact on the quality of life in that area.
Yeah, there have been a lot of parking reduction requirements in the past few years, so. Parking requirement reductions.
So we could direct them to the City of Savannah?
Yeah.
What department? Development? You said development services? I'm just trying to help them out. Not.
Yeah. I have to think about that.
Okay.
I have to probably ask Marcus Lotson who they would talk to about parking requirements.
Are there any other questions concerning the agenda?
Okay. I can go ask Marcus if you'd like. I'm sorry, excuse me. I'm being told it's the City of Savannah's Development Services Department that would tell them what the parking requirements are for that property. By our Development Services Department, they told me that.
Are there any other questions for Leah? Are we okay to adjourn the pre-meeting? Meeting adjourned.
Good afternoon.
We would like to welcome you to the March 22nd, 2003 meeting of the Historic Preservation Commission. The purpose of the commission is to protect, enhance, the perpetuation of areas having a special historical character or aesthetic interest or value in order to promote the health, prosperity, and general welfare of the people. The preservation of this heritage is of basic and vital importance for the development and maintenance of the community's culture and for the protection of of property values because of their association with history. This commission is appointed by City Council. It is not affiliated with any for-profit or nonprofit organizations. Preservation standards, visual compatibility factors, and design standards as set forth in the City of Savannah Zoning Ordinance are used by the Commission to determine the compatibility of proposed changes and new development visible from the public right-of-way, including streets, lanes, and sidewalks within the Savannah's local historic and conservation districts. The Commission cannot consider criteria not specifically identified within the ordinance, items such as land use, landscaping, parking availability, traffic noise, impact on property values, and interior arrangement of structures are not within the commission's purview and cannot be a factor in the issuance or denial of a certificate of appropriateness. Similarly, personal preferences will not be the basis of any decision. At this time, I ask that you please turn off all cell phones. Thank you. I'd like to, again, call this meeting to order and welcome everybody. We will continue with signposting. Number two, members of the board have received an electronic agenda the week prior to the meeting and visually visited the sites of the projects. If a project is not properly posted, it is removed from the agenda and rescheduled. Were there any projects not posted, properly posted this month?
Yes, there was one. It was moved to the continued agenda, and that was Green Line Architecture, 1705 Abercorn Street.
Okay, so we've moved that to the continuing agenda.
Yep.
Okay, great. So then we'll move on to the consent agenda. These items, agenda items, have been found by the preservation officer to be in accordance with the preservation standards, visual compatibility factors, and design standards, and have apparent consensus with no known objections from the public. Is there any member of the public or a board member who wishes to move an item from the consent agenda to the regular agenda? Okay. There is one. Oh, thank you.
Yes, sir. Some questions about 13 East 34th Street.
If you would, sir, please come to the microphone, state your name.
Is this a matter that's on the consent agenda?
Yes, it is. This is the 513 East 34th Street. I'm Patrick Connell. I represent Lauren Gallet, who lives next door. She's observed that the sign has not been up.
It was up for a couple of days and then came back down. It was posted, I believe, March 7th.
Do you have any pictures? You do?
Yep.
Okay.
She'll grab them.
So we won't address it now. You'll just determine whether or not you want to. He's asking that it be moved from the consent agenda to the regular agenda. So you'll simply do that. They don't have to present
evidence. If the sign's not posted.
It's currently not posted in front of the property.
I know on the 513, and the sign was posted, but it was torn down. And I put it back up, but then the front got disappeared, but the one in the back is still there. So I'm just want to state that. So if somebody tore the sign up.
Leah, what's the right?
It was the storm.
Was it posted?
not posted.
Apparently, so you have evidence that it was still posted?
There is still one posted.
Do you have evidence that it was still posted? If she has pictures that says it wasn't, do you have any evidence to show that it was?
The one in the backyard, I know, but the one in front is not.
I believe the wind blew it down. I've been out of town for the last week, and I got home last night, and there was no sign posted in the front. I think it's in the yard of the church across the street from my property. Last month, there was no sign posted in the back. There was no sign when I left my property just 20 minutes ago.
I got the photographs of when I first posted it and also the front and the back. But like I said, like a week later, the sign itself was gone. But I actually was torn up and I went to go put the half back up. But then when I came back about a couple of days later, that was it. So the whole front is missing.
It's because it had moisture and it's made of cardboard attached with little plastic screws. So the assumption is that the wind and rain did it. I don't know. But both times that the sign went up, they also came down very quickly.
So it's going to have to come off the agenda then.
Off the consent agenda or off the agenda this month?
Off the agenda this month.
Leah, motion or anything like that?
That
needs to be a motion to take it off the consent agenda and to repost it for next month.
Should the petitioner come up and speak?
Yes. Give him an opportunity to speak.
Yes. Come up to the podium, state your name.
My name is Juan Edie with J. Edie Construction Company. And what I'm here to say is that the sign was posted. When it was picked up, it was posted. Yes, we did have a rain, and like I said, when I did get back, it was torn and torn in half. Half of it was gone, but then it's like I didn't. In other words, if someone is going to vandalize, I mean, you can't watch the property 24 hours, 7 days a week. I mean, it seems to me that someone doesn't want me to build. I mean, but the sign was posted. I don't live in the area, and so I commute every day back to check on the sign. I mean, the sign was put up.
I understand. Go ahead.
The young lady stated the sign was there.
Leah, do we have any say in this, or is it just like required?
It's plain required.
I mean,
state law.
I just would say too, as the Rebecca Fenwick, as soon as you see that the sign is missing, please reach out back out to MPC to get a new sign. Like, I mean, the day that you see that it's gone, because it's a legal requirement.
It's public notice, essentially. So if the public doesn't have notice of the project, then they don't have enough time to comment. So, okay, so do we have a motion?
Sorry, sir. There's literally nothing we can do. It's a legal matter. So
a legal matter?
Yeah.
Okay. So what do I do from here? When I post a sign, do I have someone watch it for?
Sir, you can discuss that with Leah.
This is fair.
Virginia Mobley, I make a motion that we remove the petition 23-000545-513 East 34th Street from the consent agenda because it is improperly posted.
This is Darren Bagley Heath. I second that.
Called to vote.
Rebecca Fenwick, approve.
Virginia Mobley, approve.
Robin Williams, approve.
Darren Bagley-Heath, approve.
Kirsten Connor, approve.
Pam Miller, approve.
Jeff Nodriga, disapprove.
Motion carries. Now I'll need a motion for approval of the revised consent agenda, which includes, do I need a?
Ms. Rebecca Fenwick, I make a motion we approve the revised agenda.
Robin Williams, second.
Rebecca Fenwick, approve.
Virginia Mobley, approve.
Robin Williams, approve.
Darren Bagley-Heath, approve.
Pam Miller, approve.
Jeff Nodriga, approve.
I'm sorry, did I miss it? Did you all approve the consent agenda?
We just did.
Okay, so that was the consent agenda. Got it. Okay.
Moving forward to the adoption of the agenda, is there a motion to adopt the current agenda?
Robin Williams, make a motion we adopt the current agenda.
Virginia Mobley, second.
Rebecca Fenwick, approve.
Virginia Mobley, approve.
Robin Williams, approve.
Darren Bagley-Heath, approve.
Kirsten Connor, approve.
Pam Miller, approve.
Jeff Nodriga, approve.
Motion passes. Approval of the minutes of previous meeting. The minutes from the previous meeting are attached to the agenda. Are there any additions or corrections to the minutes of the previous meeting? Hearing none, do I have a motion to approve the minutes?
I make a motion to approve the minutes from the previous meeting.
Rebecca Fenwick, second.
Jeff? Call for vote.
Yeah, Jeff Nodriga, approve.
And Miller, approve.
Sorry, Kirsten Connor, approve.
Darren Bagley-Heath, approve.
Robin Williams, approve.
Virginia Mobley, approve.
Rebecca Fenwick, approve.
Motion passes. Items requested to be removed from the final agenda. If there are any items listed.
Nope.
Okay. Ask for a motion to approve the, a motion to approve the final agenda. Excuse me. Oh, excuse me.
We did.
I know. I'm wrong. Excuse me. All right. Request for extensions. There we go. If there are any items needed to be extended, is there a motion to approve the request for extensions?
Sorry, there's not any requests for extensions.
Okay, so we're moving on to the regular agenda.
Did you do the continued agenda? I apologize.
No.
Got to approve the continued agenda.
I'll get this. Continued agenda. These are items that have been continued and deferred to next meeting or a date certain or that staff has determined incomplete at this time. Is there a motion to approve the continued agenda?
Motion to approve the continued agenda. Robin Williams.
Darren Bagley-Heath, I second that.
Rebecca Fenwick, approve.
Virginia Mobley, approve.
Robin Williams, approve.
Darren Bagley-Heath, approve.
Kirsten Connor, approve.
Pam Miller, approve.
Jeff Nodriga, approve.
Terrific. Motion passes. The regular agenda. Applications that are submitted monthly appear on the regular agenda in the following order by district: Victorian District, Kyler Brownville District, Streetcar District, and Conservation Districts. Let's begin the regular agenda. Staff will present the application with a recommendation. The petitioner will then have the opportunity to respond to the recommendation. The board asks that the petitioner limit their presentation to 10 minutes or less and only address items identified as inconsistent with the ordinance and questions raised by the board. The public will then have the opportunity to comment, after which the petitioner may respond to public comment. The board will then go forward with their discussion, at which point no further testimony is received unless specifically requested of and granted by the chairman. Let's begin the regular agenda. Starting with number 10, petition of Empower Solar, Jesse Adams, 511 East Anderson Street.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair and members of the board. This is Caitlin Chamberlain presenting the petition for 511 East Anderson Street. The applicant is requesting a special exception for approval of the installation of 24 solar panels on the east, west, and south sides of the roof and east porch roof of the historic structure located at 511 East Anderson Street. For some historical context and background, 511 East Anderson Street was built in 1900 and is a contributing historic resource within the National Register Victorian Historic District and the local Victorian Historic District. It is located within a residential area that contains similar wood frame two-story houses and a mix of contributing and non-contributing resources. For the criteria for the special exception, staff found the majority of this was met. Criteria one states whether the use for which the special exception is being considered would be located, operated, and maintained in a manner in conformance with the goals, policies, and objectives of the comprehensive plan and the provisions of this ordinance. The criterion is met per the applicant. While keeping Savannah's 100% clean energy initiative in mind, this solar system will not only be a large financial benefit to the homeowner, but it will assist in furthering the city's goal of having all electricity consumed by a renewable resource. One of the goals of 100% Savannah includes having all electricity in the city generated from safe, clean, renewable energy by 2035. The use of solar energy is in conformance with the goals, policies, and objectives of the comprehensive plan, particularly in the chapter Preservation and Climate Resiliency, which discusses sustainability and allowing for upgrades to energy efficiency of historic buildings. And criterion two states whether the special exception would not be detrimental to the public interest, health, safety, welfare, function, and appearance of the adjacent uses or general vicinity. The criterion is met in the sense that the installation of the solar panels would not be detrimental to the public interest, health, safety, welfare, and function. But regarding the appearance of the adjacent uses, the high quantity of visible panels may be detrimental to the aesthetic of the Victorian district. The street view of a pedestrian perspective from the west direction would put the majority of the east side roof and porch panels in full view, as can be seen in these photos. Mind you, this is merely one perspective where many of the others are quite obscured. But staff recommends that the design be revised to reflect less visibility from that street view. Regarding the secretary, the interior standards for standard two historic character, the placement of some of the proposed solar panels, the standard is met. The panels on the west and south elevations would be placed in a way that is not visible from the street. Solar panels on the rear and east elevations would be visible from the lane, but not the surrounding streets, which is in compliance with the ordinance. And here's some of the lane views. But the other panels visible from East Anderson Street would affect the historic character of the property and do not meet that standard. For standards 5 distinctive features and 9 new additions to not damage, staff found that the standard was not met. The long-term weight impact potential of 6 solar panels on the front porch roof is concerning regarding the weight-bearing load, which could be destructive to the character-defining feature of the porch. Staff recommends either reducing or not including these panels in the project. And lastly, with regard to Victorian Historic District design standards for mechanical equipment and refuse, the standard is met for the west and south rear roof sections as they are not visible from a street and will not damage or obscure any character-defining features. The standard is not met for the east roof section and porch roof, which will be highly visible from the west-facing sidewalk view of East Anderson Street. The addition of the panels to the porch roof will obscure character-defining features of the porch. So for that, staff recommends approval of the request for the installation of solar panels on the west and south roof elevations at 511 East Anderson Street because the panels are visually compatible and meet the standards, and approve the special exception request for the installation of solar panels that are visible from the East Anderson Street view with the following condition, because the project is otherwise visually compatible and meets the standards, which is to revise, remove, or reduce the amount of proposed solar panels on the east roof elevation and porch roof and submit redesign to staff for review and approval prior to starting the project. Thank you.
Thank you. Are there any questions for staff?
This is Robin Williams. I'm just curious why staff, if they have concerns about the structural, long-term structural impact of panels on the roof, why include in your staff recommendations to revise, reduce, or remove? Why not set a separate standard or a separate recommendation that have the language apply to the east roof, but just set a say and remove from the porch roof, period? Just curious why you didn't.
It was, the staff found it was more of a quantity issue, that although yes, that is certainly a concern, that perhaps if the quantity was reduced, it wasn't found that it was completely not met.
Okay.
If that makes sense.
Thank you.
You know the height of the roof?
I don't know, have that information offhand. I don't know if it's on these plans or not.
It just says 30, but I think the 30 is a arbitrary number. Based on the letter in the back. Okay, thank you. Are there any other questions for staff? Is the petitioner present? Great. Can you please come up to the microphone? State your name for the record.
Just use your computer. Hi, good afternoon. My name is Jesse Adams. I work with Empower Solar. Just to quickly answer the questions for the integrity of the roof, as you can see with our plans here, our in-house, we have a structural engineer certified by the state of Georgia for the integrity of both levels of the roof. Myself personally am not qualified to say the means of the integrity, but I would note that the individual that is approved it. For the other question, for the height of it, I believe right here, means of the roof height is 30 feet. If there's any other questions as to the height of it, I can possibly answer, but that's the answer for both of those.
Hey, how's it going? My name's Colin. I'm the regional manager here for Empower Solar in Savannah and our home office in Charleston. So I just want to just kind of gauge the question. So one of the issues was the panels on the east side, right? From the street view. The second one was the weight impact on the porch roof, correct? Was that? Okay. And then the third one was just the integrity of the roof in general.
Those are questions that staff has.
Okay, gotcha.
Ask our questions after you finish.
Gotcha. Yeah. Okay. So the reason we put them on the east side, I totally understand that you're going to be able to see it from a couple of perspectives on the street. But one, it's a one-way street, so not a lot of stops on East Anderson. So people would have to literally turn their neck backwards and look up to see them while driving. So if you're walking down that sidewalk, they will be visible. But the reason we put them on that side is just because that's where he gets the most sunlight. And the most sunlight is obviously going to give him more production, which is going to save him more money. And it's using less greenhouse gases and CO2 emissions as well. So that's just kind of why we put them on the east side as well. As far as the weight impact, these things are built to withstand category 4 hurricanes. So that they actually increase the integrity of the roof by binding the raptures underneath, and binding the roof underneath the shingles as well. So they're built to withstand category 4 hurricanes, winds of 150 miles per hour. We shot it with softball size hail at 150 miles an hour, and these things didn't break. and ran over it with a Tundra, and they also didn't break then. So they're very strong. It actually makes the roof stronger. As far as the six panels on that, 300 pounds is not going to really affect the integrity of that porch roof. Any questions from anyone?
Capulet Vina, I do have a couple of questions for
yes.
you.
Yes.
What's the overall height to the top panel of those, the top surface of the panels, from the roof to the top of the surface of the panels?
Yeah, so the they're about 2 inches off the actual roof. Got them right here. Three inches total? Yeah, 3 inches off the like.
That includes the clips and the panels themselves.
I'd say about 4 inches, including the clips.
Yeah, the structure,
yes.
right? The clips are the structure, or
Correct.
Are the bar
like
structure?
The top of from the bottom from where it clips into the roof to the Correct. top of the panel, I would say about 4 inches.
4 inches.
Yeah.
Okay. Do they move? Do they fluctuate?
No, they're stationary.
So they follow the slope of the roof?
Yes.
Okay. What's the setback from the edge of the roof?
From
the edge of the roof on the east side, the setback.
You got the that'd be right here. 3 feet from the panels to the are you saying to the window?
Like the edge of the roof.
To the edge of the roof? 3 feet.
And those are fire setback. Those are normal Georgia state law that you have to have those certain setbacks.
Yeah, and without these panels, I mean he would lose about 20% production on those on the roof plane.
Yes, I understand, but that's not our concern.
Gotcha.
That's not our direct concern. What color are they?
They're black.
So they blend in with the.
Yeah, they're black on black. They look like flat screen TVs up there.
Those are all my questions. Any other questions? Okay. Great. Thank you so much.
Thanks.
Are there any members of the public that would like to comment?
Thank you.
We will now enter board discussion. At this time, all public debate is closed and no further comments will be accepted.
I have a question for staff. Does not the ordinance cover the visual compatibility from the streets and lanes? And
I was going to say, you can finish.
Pardon?
I thought you were finished. You can finish your question.
And even though Anderson is a one-way street, you have people who walk in that area. And it does not say depending on the direction of the street. It says visibility from a street or lane. Is that correct?
Correct. So, but for the case of solar panels, it's just from the street view and not the lane view. And then we did evaluate this based on visibility from the public right of way, regardless of which way traffic was going.
And are they visible? Or would they be?
Well, yeah, that was what the presentation was showing here, is just some of the perspectives from that side facing.
So they would be visible from the right of way.
It just seems what would be in front of the chimney would be more visible than anywhere else.
And there are discussions about creating two ways for Anderson as well as Henry. So you can't do it from now.
No, we can't
forever.
Rely on the direction of traffic.
Right.
We have to use the physical street as our friend and guide, really. And I think one of the issues is with making so many exceptions, not just for not solar panels, but so many exceptions, we are threatening the historical integrity of these buildings.
This is Darren Bagley Heath. To speak to it, I understand where you're coming from, Virginia. However, this is a part of the green energy policy. There is a certain movement forward, and it is like it's not like a solar panel is permanent, right? So
25 years.
Well, that's not permanent. It's not as permanent as the building. So if there was a change in technology that was more energy efficient down the line, which I'm sure there will be, then there'll be a rethought on that. So are you destroying the historical integrity of a building? Not necessarily, but you also, we have conflicting goals within our community, one for historic preservation, the other one for clean energy. And it's how do we negotiate that process that gives everybody some equity and a good resource, because the amount of sunlight we get and the amount of square footage of roofing that we have in our historic districts would make a substantial impact as far as the community's green goals.
Kirsten.
Go ahead, Kirsten.
Sorry. Kirsten Connor, I completely agree with Darren on this. And to your point about it making so many exceptions, I think the whole point of it coming to the board because it is not following the standards is so we can review it to see if it makes sense to have an exception. So I'm in total agreement with solar panels going on this house. I think they have proved their point to it not destroying the structural integrity of the porch. As well, these solar panels they said are from the clip 4 inches high. And they do have a setback away from the edge of the roof. So I do understand where you are coming from as well, but I completely agree that this should
pass. Virginia Mobley, where do you draw the line? If it's okay for solar panels, where do you draw the line?
Well, as Darren said, these are not permanent. So that's a contributing factor. And it is case by case. That's the whole point of the board. So.
Rebecca, go ahead.
Rebecca Fenwick. It seems to me like the staff recommendation is a point of compromise in that there are some facades specifically which are more visible than others, and that is why staff has stated their recommendation the way that they have. And it seems a little bit vague in that they need to come back for approval, which will probably happen at the staff level.
Right.
So we could make the language stronger, and that's something I would bring to the table. But I was going to ask if you can put the staff recommendation back up. Thank you.
While you do that, Kathy Ledvina, I think just the amount of solar panels is what diminishes the historic character of the property. To meet the Secretary of Interior standards, panels should be installed on a historic property in a location that cannot be seen from the ground, minimally visible to avoid altering the historic character of the building. These certainly are not out of sight. They are obtrusive. I understand the need for solar energy. There are alternative applications. You can do solar shingles, which would not be as obtrusive on that side. There are a lot of options out there. And I think the staff recommendations are a compromise. I agree with Rebecca.
Kirsten Connor, I agree with you on that. There are other alternatives that would not compromise the historic integrity from the street view. However, the costs can be quite of a difference. But I also agree the staff recommendation is a good compromise between what we are all debating about. So I would highly recommend looking to that.
And even if maybe, you know, they set them back behind the chimney, so the chimney is... I guess, a little bit farther behind. To me, the chimney reads proud of the, I don't have the plan in front of me. There you go, right there. See how they align with the chimney?
Although there's Robin Williams, they said that they'd be set. The plan shows them, it's kind of hard to read this plan. Like, is the roof plan, is that setback? So they have two parallel lines showing the roof. And it's not clear, is that the setback? And is the chimney, maybe we could ask the applicant, is the chimney setback the same distance as the solar panels? Because the roof plan that you're showing, it's really a confusing roof plan.
I read it as though they align with the chimney. And I thought maybe if they were set back, you could put a reduced amount of panels there.
So this is Robin Williams. I mean, can you go back to the street view? Because these two are, I think, pretty representative of what a pedestrian experience would be. And clearly the porch roof is far more visible being on the top first floor versus the top floor roof. And I think one of the ways to compromise would be to say, well, they would be most conspicuous on that porch roof, regardless of structural integrity, especially the first four panels from Anderson moving back. There's a shed next door that might block the view of the rearmost panels on the porch, but it seems like three or four panels on the porch, if not all of them. And I was curious why the south roof doesn't have a panel, since view from the lane is not an issue. There's the south triangular hip has no panel on it. And I don't know how many panels you could fit there, but you could put at least one. And so I'm in support of staff recommendations, and it seems to be that there is latitude to accommodate one and maybe reduce some of the numbers on the porch. I'm less concerned and agree with my colleagues that we have to find ways to accommodate solar panels and an upper story roof that, once you get closer to the building and close enough to see the panels, the angle of the roof is going to be of the top roof. The porch roof is going to remain visible. So that's...
Does anybody have any questions further for the petitioner? Okay. Will the petitioner reapproach?
Mr. Williams, may I step forward to show you this real quick?
I guess if you could work with what's on the screen. I don't know.
This is on my computer specifically.
Oh,
if you have eagle eyes, this is it. So if you can see here, the setbacks for the roof, this is a picture from a drone. The chimney line of the width of there, I'm sorry, the length of it, we're not able to put the panels anything more forward of it, because if you can see the shingle, the integrity of the roof wouldn't be able to hold it. So they have to go behind the panel. So I do understand what you were saying, the plans, somebody said the plans are a little vague as to, I mean, the plans are just a representation of it. It's not really exactly what they're going to look like. But this picture here will show you exactly where the panels will be.
So is the roof plan, the outer line is the edge of the soffit, and the inner line basically is the wall of the house where you can start putting the wall underneath the roof.
Right.
Is where, so you have two lines. It's an unusual roof plan.
Yes, sir. Yeah, I think you got that right. And then also, just to hit back onto your last question as to why the panels aren't on the south side, the picture that I also have, there are some vents, I believe they're for restrooms or possibly, you can see them, that's preventing panels.
In the south face?
That's what I was just asking, vent. That's where the vents are.
Got it.
Because I don't know about solar installs, you're not confined to this specific dimension, are you?
Panel-wise.
panel wise?
Correct.
That's the panels that he decided he wanted.
I mean, you can do half panels, correct, and cover maybe more of the surface of the other portions of the roof.
No, so they're 40 they're 400 watt panels, so they're about. I mean, we.
But you can't do two 200 watt panels.
No, we just we don't sell the. Yeah.
You don't sell them. Mm-hmm. Well,
Kirsten Connor, would it be doable to reduce the number on the porch roof?
The number we don't want to go below is 60% because that's where it becomes an economic benefit for Hans here, and his partner. And so if we removed I think maybe two panels off the corner of the roof and the front side there that you can see, so that you still have four panels kind of where that house is, that could get us to around 59-60%, and it would still be an economic benefit for Hans, yes. But any more than that, it wouldn't make sense because of that battery that we have. He's getting a battery system as well for backup power, just so he can be more self-sufficient. And below that 60% mark, that's when the battery doesn't really start working very well. We just want to make sure he gets the best bang for his buck.
Okay.
Can you,
Miller?
Sorry, this is Robin Williams. So how many panels are you proposing?
Total?
Yeah.
Should be 24.
It was 24 panels.
And you're saying if we remove two, you go from 100% down to 60%?
No. So we're at 66 right now because with Georgia Power.
You reference what the percent of what?
Yep. So the offset of his energy that we can, that the solar can that can produce, with Georgia Power, you don't want to go above 70%. Because then they don't send you back anything for the energy that you send to them, right? So the sweet spot with Georgia Power is 60-70%. So that's the kind of range we want to be in for it to make sense for Hans. Am I making sense there? Okay.
Pam Miller, I just want to state my concern with the roof line is that becomes visibly would be a regular one-story home, right? So though most of our homes are two-story, I think the visibility from the street is my concern for the roof.
On the porch roof?
On the porch roof.
Will you entertain a motion, Madam Chair?
Call for a motion.
This is Rebecca Fenwick. I make a motion that we approve the project at 511 East Anderson Street with staff recommendations. Can you put those back up? Thank you. With the special exception that the east facade and the porch be revised to have fewer panels.
Isn't that implicit in the staff recommendation?
I think I have to call out the special exception in the motion.
So what about the first part, approve the request on the
right
east and south? Is that part of your motion?
I can restate.
Try again.
Okay. I make a motion we approve the project at 511 East Anderson Street because the panels are visually compatible and meet the standards, and approve the special exception request. With the following condition, specifically that the east wall and the porch quantity of panels be reduced.
Robin Williams, second.
Call the vote. Jeff?
Approve.
Approve.
Kirsten Connor, disapprove.
Darren Bagley, he's approve.
Robin Williams, approve.
Virginia Mobley, approve.
Rebecca Fenwick, approve.
Motion passes. Thank you.
So just for clarification, if we remove the two panels off of there, the four that would be out of basically out of sight can stay?
That's up for staff to decide.
Okay.
So you'll have to revise your design and staff will look.
Cool.
Thank you.
Yeah. Yeah, the language was vague enough to give you wiggle room to work with staff.
Appreciate it. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you for your support.
Thank you. Moving on, petition of Ethos Preservation, 538 East Bolton Street.
Rebecca Fenwick, I'll be recusing myself.
Kirsten Connor, I will recuse myself as well.
Thank you.
You're going to get me today instead of Jamie on this one, just so you know. So this is Leah. All right. The applicant is proposing rehabilitation additions and new construction, small parts 1 and 2 at 538 East Bolton Street. I'm sure this looks familiar to everybody. The existing non-historic rear addition is proposed to be demolished and replaced with this proposed new addition. The new addition will be recessed from the principal building, and you can see that recess. Floor plan. Here and here. All right, so the petition was initially heard at the last meeting on February 22nd, and at that meeting you all voted to continue to the continue the petition to address five conditions. I'm going to go over those conditions, and then I'm going to go over how they responded to those conditions. One was to revise the height of the accessory dwelling unit to be subordinate to the addition and principal building, as well as visually compatible in height with the surrounding lane context. Two, revise the height of the new addition so that it's subordinate in height to the principal building. Three, provide a dimension for the height of the railing. Four, provide a dimension for the width of the garage door opening. And five, revise the proposed fence to conform with the standards. So the conditions have been addressed with the following revisions. The height of the accessory dwelling unit has been reduced from 22 feet, 3 inches to, sorry, I don't know why this isn't working. There we go. Very slowly. 22 feet, 3 inches to 21 feet to the top of the parapet. So it used to be up about here. Two, the height of the addition has been reduced from 22 feet to 21 feet, 6 inches. So it used to be, again, up about there and aligned with the historic building. It's now, its cornice is now below the fascia of the historic building. The height of the railing is now dimensioned over here. Which width of the garage door is provided. And the new fence has been removed from the site. So because those were the items that were addressed in the conditions, those are the ones that we're going to talk about today. With regard to height and visual compatibility, the height of the addition has been revised to be lower than the historic building's roofline. The accessory dwelling unit has been revised to be subordinate to the new addition. The height, we find that the height of both are now visually compatible. And we find that the use of these low-pitched roof shapes were, for all intents and purposes, flat and parapeted roofs are allows for the historic roofline of the principal structure to not be obscured, and we find them visually compatible. Okay, so the height of a railing shall not exceed 36 inches in a single and two-family dwelling, and that standard is now met. You can see that in this drawing here.
The addition is now subordinate in height as required by the design standards. The height has been reduced. So the applicant, and this might be a good question for the applicant if it comes up, where the addition, the old addition used to be attached, our understanding is that this whole rear has to be, this whole rear portion has to be reconstructed. So the petitioner has also provided information that the rear portion of the eaves of the historic building were reconstructed during the construction of the existing non-historic addition. So this actually is not a historic eave. So new accessory structures shall be in scale with other contributing contributing accessory structures on the lane. So again, the petitioner has reduced the overall scale of the accessory dwelling unit. There's only one contributing accessory structure on the lane. It's further down and is obscured by new construction. Staff is recommending approval of the rehabilitation additions and new construction as requested because the proposed work is visually compatible and meets the standards. I'll be happy to answer any questions.
Are there any questions for staff?
Will the petitioner please come forward and state their name for the record?
Good afternoon. My name is Ellen Harris with Ethos Preservation. I'm here with the new owners, the Scallies, and we are happy to answer any questions that you have.
Are there any questions for the petitioner? No? Okay. Are there any members of the public that would like to comment? Good. We will now enter board discussion.
This is Robin Williams. I think they've done a good job accommodating the comments of the board from last month.
I agree. Anybody else? Okay, terrific. We can now entertain a motion.
This is Robin Williams. I make a motion that we approve staff recommendation for the approval of approve the rehabilitation additions and new construction small parts 1 and 2 at 538 Bolton Street as requested, because they're visually compatible and meet the standard.
Is there a Mobley? Second.
Okay. Call to vote. Jeff?
Jeff Dontrica, approve.
Pam Miller, approve.
Darren Bagley-Heath, approve.
Robin Williams, approve.
Virginia Mobley, approve.
Motion passes. Thank you. Moving on. Number 12, petition of the City of Savannah, code compliance officers. 515 West 37th Street.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chairwoman. This is Ethan Hageman presenting for staff. Today before you is the request for approval of a contributing building located at 515 West 37th Street. Oh, sorry, I got to scroll down. This request today is a court ordered demolition. The building was built in 1913. To give you guys a little bit of background on what had happened was on the morning of February 14th, code compliance received a report of a fire at the property. Upon responding to this area, the structure was completely burnt and the roof structure was at risk of collapse, as seen through some of these photos in the exhibit. City of Savannah building official conducted a building observation report in which he stated the interior structure fire caused extensive interior damage and wall collapse, exterior wall collapse, extensive damage to the roof and rafter system, and is in danger of collapse. Property is open and unsecured, causing damage. It also caused damage to the neighboring property at 513 West 37th Street. He recommended demolition. Code compliance took this to recorder's court on February 15th of this year. And at the hearing, the heir of the property consented to allowing the City of Savannah to conduct demolition. In regards to the standards we have in place in our ordinance for demolition of a contributing structure, it meets it due to being dilapidated, unsafe, unsanitary, and it's a danger to human life and also a public nuisance. For the application requirements, it does not need to meet those because it poses an immediate threat to public safety. So today we are recommending approval for demolition of the contributing building at 515 West 37th with the condition that they document the building per MPC's documentation policy. I'm now open to questions from the board members.
This is Robin Williams. It seems like at a minimum, the porch columns could be salvaged. And is there anything we could put in the language that would guide the demolition, say, with the salvaging, working with the salvage company for the, and I'll defer to Kirsten or if May Boley were here, someone who could say maybe there's more, but certainly the porch columns look like they have good integrity and they're certainly probably solid wood and certainly could be repurposed and give at least a little bit of this building a second life.
Kirsten Connor, I don't know if we can recommend that since it is the contractor the city uses is under a contract with the city, so they just do what they do, and there's no there's usually no in between, but I don't know if that's possible or not.
Yeah, I want to say we discussed it extensively last time during the last demolition. I'm honestly not 100% sure for the city of Savannah when they go through and do it. I know if it's an individual demolition company, we can put those conditions, but given that it is a city, I am not 100% sure on that one.
Virginia Mobley, didn't we on the demolition on Ogeechee Road stipulate that what material could be salvaged before the city did the demolition a couple of years ago, Leah?
The city has a contract with a demolition contractor, and we can't make them
ask
change that.
Them?
You can. We ask them every month. You can certainly ask them.
This is Darren Bagley, Heath Lear. So who is responsible for the doing the archiving?
So the municipal archives. So the documentation policy has a process at the end where it's submitted to the municipal archives.
But who does that documentation?
Oh, whoever they hire to do it.
Okay. So there's no, obviously something like that could go through and potentially identify salvageable items that could then potentially be saved through a negotiation with the demolition company. Like, hey, save these for me. I'll give you some money.
They already have a contract with them.
I believe, and correct me if I'm wrong, Kathy Ledvina, this is a part of the subcommittee's tasks, right, to try to implement a salvage portion when the new contract that the city enters in.
Rebecca Fenwick, this is something that was discussed in the subcommittee, and I'll just bring to the table that I know that there are people in the community that are like outside of this group that are advocating for a new ordinance. And until those things are in place, there's a lot of pre-development, like preparation that has to take place in order to even make it possible for like the city to have a deconstruction option. So we have made some revisions to language to include deconstruction as an option just in the ordinance itself so that it's not completely absent from our language. But as everyone has stated, the kind of the contracts as they are, I don't know that there's a way around it.
Any other further discussion? Would the petitioner like to step forward?
Good afternoon.
Please state your name for the record.
Officer Danielle Jones, Co-Compliance Department. I
To answer your question about the deconstruction and saving the pieces, the city's contractor is determined by bid, and that company that does the reclaiming of the materials would have to put in a bid with the city, and then that bid would have to be accepted.
Great. Thank you for the clarification. Any other questions for the petitioner?
Is that a yearly contract or is it individual?
I believe it's a yearly. It's my supervisor.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Please state your name.
Bridget Jones, City of Savannah, Code Compliance.
Yeah. Any other questions for Code Compliance? Terrific. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Are there any members of the public that like to step forward? Okay. We will now enter board discussion. At this time, all public debate is closed and no further comments will be accepted. Any comments from the board?
Pam Miller, I just have a question. Even if we can't make a condition, can we make a recommendation? Can't do that.
No. So what's before you today is the recommendation for approval with the following condition. So you could make a condition on top of that, but the ultimate recommendation by staff is approval.
So I think, Robin Williams, I think we could certainly put a recommendation to that the salvage company or the demolition company consider, but there's nothing binding them to that.
You ready to entertain a motion?
Virginia Mobley, I make a recommendation that we accept, that we approve staff's recommendation with the documentation of the building per MPC documentation policy and the added condition that we suggest and ask wholeheartedly that the demolition company that is contracted to do this work look into salvaging as much historical material as possible.
Kirsten Connor, I second that.
Rebecca Fenwick, approve.
Virginia Mobley, approve.
Robin Williams, approve.
Darren Bagley Heath, approve.
Kirsten Connor, approve.
Pam Miller, approve.
Jeff Nutrika, approve.
Motion passes. Thank you. Moving on. Street car distance. Number 13, Juan Allen D. Oh. Moving on.
That's a different one.
That's a different one.
Yeah.
All right. 503 East 34th Street. The applicant is requesting approval for rehabilitation and alterations to the property at 503 East 34th Street. Yes, this is not 513 East 34th Street. This is an existing building down the street. Specifically, they're proposing to perform in-kind replacement of broken siding and roof shingles and replace existing windows with Victor-built historic series wood double-hung windows with true divided lights. They're also proposing to add a rear yard porch and replace the existing foundation lattice with wood lattice. So I'm just going to explain this a little bit. So we were talking with the applicant before he started doing any work for a while, but then he started some of this work here and he started building this porch. So you'll notice a couple of things in the drawings. One, this porch looks different in the drawings than what's here. And that's because we were suggesting a different roof form. So what he's showing in the drawings is what he's proposing, not what's showing in the photographs. Does that make sense? He's going to take this off
and put on what is showing in the drawings. And another thing that you'll notice is an error in the drawings that was brought to our attention this morning. So it's they're not really using the drawings to show very much, because really the scope of work is this little porch and then replacing the windows. So the drawings of the buildings themselves, the building itself isn't really showing anything. But I will explain what the error is here. So you can see this is a 1.5 story building. So that roof that's up there should be down here, basically. So in the back, you would see this roof line lower like this. But it's not one consistent roof shape. See how you can see it peeking up there? It's a strange little building. All right. Just wanted to make sure you could see what was going on with those drawings there.
And that's the addition versus the historic.
Right. Exactly.
The porch dimension isn't correct either.
The porch dimension isn't?
Wait, it's too high in the drawing. I mean, it seemed to me like it was a different house.
Well, it's not. It's the right house. It's just not drawn quite right. So, anywho. All right. So regarding the Secretary of the Interior standards, oops. We don't find the standards to be met. Although the majority of the work meets the standards, as it's primarily in-kind repair and replacement, the proposed replacement of the historic windows does not meet the standards. Staff visited the site and determined that the historic sashes could be repaired. The sashes are in good condition for the most part, but you can see on the inside that everything else is gone. There's nothing holding in the sashes. So we're suggesting that we're recommending that the sashes be reused. You can see on the outside that they're in good condition. So the proposed new porch on the rear of the property is visually compatible in height, width, and scale. The elements on the porch are compatible. I see what you're saying. So this is actually a little bit shorter than what's there. But he's proposing at staff's request that this roof shape changed to...
I'm at the front porch, but it's okay. It doesn't, like you said, it doesn't matter. They're not proposing work on the front.
Right. We find that the materials utilized are proposed to be in-kind and match the existing materials on the property, and the new porch is proposed to be constructed of wood. Within this foundation, lattice is proposed to be infilled and recessed 3 inches behind the concrete piers to match the rest of the building. All right, so with windows and alterations to contributing resources, I'm going to read the standard here. Windows shall be repaired rather than replaced, provided, however, if the degree of degradation does not allow repair, the degradation of each window shall be photographically documented and verified by the planning director, and the new window shall be of the same materials configuration as the original, including single glaze and true divided light when appropriate. Again, staff does not find these standards to be met. Although the Victor Built historic window series, the wood double hung single pane true divided light windows are proposed. They're proposing to replace all the historic windows on the property, which the majority of them, the sashes are in good condition. They're missing all of the interior trim to hold the windows in. So the one window that we are supporting the replacement of is the 6/6 window up here, because we don't find that
That's likely a replacement window or even maybe a window that was added later, possibly, because it wouldn't have had a 6/6 light and it doesn't have the same trim around it here. So we are supporting replacement of that window. So the new porch on the rear needs to have a cap and a base molding. Need to have that added there. And the eaves on this porch, there's not a dimension. They need to extend no less than 12 inches beyond the supporting wall here. Well, the post, I suppose we should say. All right. Staff is recommending approval with the following conditions to be submitted to staff for final review and approval, because otherwise the work is visually compatible and meets the standards. That's to repair the historic windows on the first floor of the front facade and the historic portion of the west facade instead of replacing them. Two, revise the rear porch posts to have cap and base molding. And three, provide a dimension for the extension of the eaves on the porch roof. And I will just let you know that the applicant is not in agreement with not replacing the windows, which is why we're here looking at this one, obviously, because normally window replacement is a staff review item. So I just wanted to give you that piece of information before we move on. Happy to answer any questions.
Any questions for staff? Will the petitioner please come forward? State your name for the record again.
The name is Juan Eady, and I'm with J. Eady Construction Company. And for the sake of the 503 East 34th Street, when I first drew it, I did draw the front taller, but I made some revisements. I did shorten it. I didn't have time to upload it to a PDF, but if you don't mind, I'm going to share this with Ms. Leah. Ms. Leah.
Oh,
I got some more if you want to pass it out. Yeah, I didn't have time to upload them to the PDF, so I just brought copies. Yeah. Can everybody see? So anyways, getting back to the sheet you have is an A1, which is the elevation part of the structure. On that particular drawing, I do have it drawn where we're going to put it's like a 2/2 above the front porch window. I mean, you know, to replace the 6/6. And I had mentioned to Talia, I'm going to say, well, just to back up for a second, if we drop down to the elevation, which is called the west side, as you can see that one part of the house is like old, which is like it's a line drawn to where it comes down to a single story. Well, the house has been added onto, not by me of any, you know, I bought it like that. So I had asked that because all the windows past the where you can see the addition part of the house, they aren't like original windows. I was going to ask that can I replace those with the Victor, because it's not the original part of the house. So I'm going to do my best, even though I tried to find people to help me do the original part of the windows. And each one of those was giving me like 13 months before they could even look at them, not even work on them, but 13 months before they can even look at them. So that's a year and a month. So that kind of hurts me. But anyway, I was going to ask if it's possible, could I change the rear part of the windows on the back of the house? I mean, they're Victor built windows. They are made just like the ones in the front, but they don't have the weight calibration. They just, but they do operate the same.
It's my understanding that the staff did recommend and approve that.
Oh, they did. I'm sorry.
Correct?
I'm sorry.
If you read condition number one on the screen there, that's just confined to the front facade and the historic portion of the west facade.
Okay. Okay. Well, that's pretty much it. That's all I'd had to say.
Okay. Are there any questions for the petitioner?
So you're in agreement with staff as far as the other two conditions, revise the rear porch posts, cap and base molding, and provide a dimension for the extension of the eaves on the porch roof, correct?
That is definitely true.
So you're in agreement with all the recommendations that have been put forward?
Yes, I'm in agreement.
Any other questions
for the petitioner? Are there any members of the public who would like to comment? All right, thank you, sir. We'll now enter into board discussion, and at this point, all public debate is closed, so no further comments will be taken. Your board discussion?
Sounds like we're ready for a motion.
Go ahead.
Okay. Motion, we approve the project at 503 East 34th Street with the three staff conditions.
Second. Robin. Virginia Mobley, second.
Sorry. She beat you.
Rebecca, vote.
Rebecca Fenwick, approve.
Virginia Mobley, approve.
Robin Williams, approve.
Darren Begley-Heath, approve.
Kirsten Connor, approve.
Pam Miller, approve.
Jeff Nutrika, approve.
Motion passes. Thank you, sir. Moving on, petition 14 of VP2 Design, 306 East 34th Street.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair, woman. This is Ethan Hagerman, presented for staff. Today, the petitioner is requesting approval for demolition of a non-contributing building and new construction small parts 1 and 2 of a new carriage house or accessory dwelling unit in the rear of this property located at 306 East 34th Street. I'm going to break it down into two parts, so we'll look at the demolition first. Currently, what's existing is a 280-square-foot CMU block shed in the rear. We were not able to track down what date it was built in, but through research of looking at the tax records, the Sanborn maps, and the cadastral surveys, we determined it was probably after the 55 Sanborn map, mainly due because the cadastral surveys dimensions of the building is much different than what's currently existing. This is like a 10 by 19 compared to a 20 by 14. So we believe that it doesn't contain any historic value and that it's probably sometime post 1960 or so. So with that said, we are recommending approval for the demolition of this non-contributing building. Moving into the new construction portion of this application, the petitioner is proposing a new carriage house. Here's the site plan. Looking at development standards, we got to take into consideration this is a fairly large lot for the streetcar neighborhood. It's at over 6,200 square feet lot size. The principal structure takes up very little room on the already existing lot. So with the proposed building coverage of the new carriage house, they're allowed 3,748 square feet. This new carriage house would only take up 1,393 square feet with the principal structure as well. And that puts them at only 22% of building coverage. So they are well below how much they're allowed. And why I say that is just to put the scale of this project into perspective, given the large nature of this lot. Moving into visual compatibility. I'm going to show you, this is the context elevation. The main ridge height of the carriage house is proposed to be at 21 feet, 10 and 1/4 inch. The principal structure is at over 24 feet, so it is subordinate to that main structure. The distance from it is well over the 10-foot minimum, which is required if you're going to build a carriage house. Moving on to scale, which I previously addressed, and I want to address for visual compatibility, the roof, proposed roof. It's going to be kind of a complex shape. There are many examples in the neighborhood of the roof shapes being complex, if I'm able to zoom out of this. So there's examples. Oh, you can't go 3D on this one, but this is a complex roof shape. There's many examples of contributing buildings around the subject property having that roof shape. Also, for scale, this is a very unique alley in the streetcar neighborhood. It's a one-way in, one-way out lane where it does not continue over to Habersham. The main people that use this lane is going to be for your receptacle, your trash pickup, people who are entering, driving in, parking in the back. It's not necessarily a thoroughfare to get over to Habersham. So we do believe as staff that the scale of this building is appropriate. Moving on to the design standards of this building. The only issue that staff had was that the proposed railing height of the staircase to the second floor is currently at 42 inches. We're requesting that it move down to meet the standard of 36 inches. The petitioner is amenable to this change and has already agreed upon it. So with that said, we're moving on to the recommendation where we are recommending approval for this project with that one condition of revising the railing height. I'm now open to any questions if the board has any.
Are there any questions for staff?
I have a question.
Yes, ma'am.
In this particular block, does
yes.
not the property that abuts Habersham Street have lane access?
No, ma'am. So this, well, what's really unique about most of
no,
the lanes?
Not lane access to Habersham, but lane access from 34th.
From 34th.
No.
Yes, well, I see your point. Yes, ma'am. So Google's not going to cooperate here, but yes. So the building on these buildings are fronting Habersham right here, if you're able to see these. I'm not 100% sure if they have lane, if they have a gate in their backyard, but yes, their backyard does abut the lane. I think a better view too would be Sages, the parcel map. We could probably pull that up and see where their back property is abutting the lane. But yeah, so this lane is very maintenance focused, parking focused. It's not your average lane in streetcar downtown where people are also going to be walking through it.
It's
and providing
a typical
connectivity.
Lane in that area.
Yes, ma'am. Correct. So we're looking at, yeah, so we got, there's two properties that abut the lane right here.
So there is actually used on Habersham an access to the lane that comes out on 34th Street and on Lincoln. Goes right there.
Yeah, so here's yeah, your little access point right there.
Jump back to the Sages.
Yeah. So
Mike,
I'm not sure
where I'm going is, if you consider this a one-way lane,
mm-hmm.
is there enough turning radius width-wise for that garage to be functioning?
So wait, this part of the lane right here?
Where this property backs up.
I mean, I would have to know the dimensions of it and then do the turning radius calculations for it, which I haven't done. But with a 15-foot width, I'm sure there's going to be plenty of room. It does. I mean, it's going to depend also on the vehicle size. If we're talking a large truck compared to a small car. But yes, I'm pretty sure with a 15-foot width in this lane that there's going
to
be enough.
So are you going to put a caveat that they have to have little cars to live there?
No. What I'm saying is I'm not a part of the traffic and engineering department, but even there's plenty. We love DJ Khaled, but what I'm saying is there's plenty of examples of lanes being much narrower than 15 feet throughout historic Savannah and them having garage access. So it is quite possible. It may be more than a 1-point turn, but yes, it is possible.
This is Robin Williams. Is there a rear yard setback from the lane for this building?
They're allowed to have up to 5 feet. They chose right over 3 feet, I believe. We could look at site
plan. When you say they're allowed, could they not move the whole carriage house closer to the house and have more of a setback from the lane to allow for turning radius?
Not more than five.
But a five, that would make it 20 feet from the width of the lane as far as a turning radius to come in if they had a 5-foot apron, right?
So, Ms. Mobley and Mr. Dr. Williams, I guess what I want to draw your attention to is if we looked at the aerial map of Sages, there's not really going to be much of a turning radius concern. As you see, there's not an existing structure on the other side of the lane. So I really don't see this becoming an issue of dealing with that turning radius of the vehicle.
What's going to prevent the people on 33rd Street from building a carriage house?
Yeah, that is quite possible because they do have the lot depth. So yeah, in the future, they possibly could, but then they would be subject, if the ordinance is still in place, to being able to push it back 5 feet from the rear yard line.
Yeah, I think that the homeowners, go ahead. The homeowners can determine if they want to move it back to 5 feet. That's not in our purview.
Well, excuse me, Melanie Wilson, Executive Director. I just thought I would, because these are kind of more technical zoning questions with regards to the dimensions. You know, a typical parking stall is, 9 by 15 feet long. So if you've got at least 9 feet and this is 15 feet, there should be enough room to do a turn. If I were the homeowner, I would move it in, even if it's 2 feet, to get as much width as I could. But that is up to the homeowner to make that decision. And the applicant is here, so I would suggest that you ask them those detailed questions. I don't know if Ethan is, really able to honestly respond to that. But I did want to make sure you understood that the parking dimensions is 9 by 15. Or 9 by 18, depending on what size car you have.
Thank you. Virginia, does that satisfy you? Okay.
Are there any other questions from the board?
Would the applicant please step forward? State your name for the record.
I don't know. Victor Plusnik, VP2 Design. Currently, actually, with the setback on the rear of the carriage house, we have approximately 3 feet off the rear setback. So we're looking about 18 feet clear. Depending on the homeowner, I can bring it up to him and find out if he wants to bring it back an additional 2 to 3 feet, or 2 feet, I guess, at that point.
All right. Any other questions? Are there any members from the public that would like to comment? Please state your name for the record.
My name is Ryan Jarles, Director of Preservation and Historic Properties for Historic Savannah Foundation. So I guess it's no mystery who the member of the public was who pulled this off consent. And Rebecca, I like your ringtone. ARC met this past Monday, and they determined at that time they felt that this project was large enough that it deemed appropriateness to be seen by you all instead of being on the consent agenda. And their main concern comes from the what Ethan mentioned, the complexity of the roof structure, referencing the dormers, with the basic and simple design of the main historic structure, ARC, would just simply suggest a simpler hipped roof, especially with the proposed carriage house being so close in size to the main house. They just felt it more appropriate for a simpler roof design like the main historic structure. Thank you.
Thank you. Would the petitioner like to respond?
Actually, if you can pull up the elevations on the on the carriage house, originally there was gable roofs on it, and if you look at the if you look at the rear or the front, they went to hips. The only gables we have are the little dormers over the windows, and then we have the front, the porch. Other than that, the rest of it's hip to match the existing home.
Yes.
So this is Robin Williams. If you could, Ethan, if you can go back up to the lane elevation there, go. Yes. And so on the carriage house lane elevation proposed, you have a small window and a larger window. Is the little gable roof over the larger window functional, or is it just an aesthetic element to break up the
just
roof?
Aesthetic element.
Okay, and this is and then is there another gable that I guess there's one down below? Is that the house
right.
elevation?
Yep.
You have a couple of gables, and likewise, now one has a vent. I see. I think.
Correct.
Something louver. And so the smaller gable over the double window, likewise, is merely an exterior. Aesthetic elements, not providing any significant additional headspace inside the.
Actually, it would be a vaulted ceiling inside that dormer. So the ceiling height on that is adequate. There doesn't necessarily need to be additional height within the room.
So I see 9'10". Is that the right dimension for the interior? Second floor up to the top plate. Is that 9'10"?
Should be 9 foot even.
Oh, it's really hard to see.
There we go.
I can barely see it myself.
Ah, 9 feet even. Okay. So for practical purposes, though, they're more aesthetic than practical from the inside. They're more aesthetic on the outside.
Right.
Okay. Thank you.
However, they also, they would be cathedral framed, so that just kind of open up the space inside a little bit more.
Above the 9 foot mark.
Correct.
Only in front of the window.
Correct.
Yeah. Okay.
This is Kathy Lidvine. I've got a question for the petitioner. I was noticing the use of stucco on that first portion of the building. It states that the building's built on slab, and this appears that the building is built on pier foundation, and that's a typical treatment that you would see in a pier found in a pier supported building. However, there's no steps, there's no porch on the main level. Is that just aesthetic, or what was your thought behind that?
It's more aesthetic than anything else, and also just as far as, you know, the rain, etc., it's just a little bit more durable than having your, even though it's going to be hardy, it will make it last a bit longer than being splashed on, et cetera, through the years.
All right, thank you.
You're welcome.
Any other questions for the petitioner? No. We will now enter into board discussion. At this time, all public debate is closed and no further comments will be accepted. Any comments from the board?
This is Rebecca Fenwick. I was just curious if the board understood the comments about the roof line. Is this an attempt to make it simpler so as not to create a false sense of history, or what is the group's perception?
Robin Williams, my interpretation is that just like on that earlier petition where we asked for the height of the carriage house to be lower so that it's clearly subordinate to the main house, I think roof complexity could be argued to be a hierarchical thing, that the house being already a simple hip, making the carriage house a more complex massing might alter that relationship. And the goal is to make these rear buildings subordinate to the main building. And especially if these gables are principally aesthetic, maybe give it more visual interest, but it's a rear building and I'm sympathetic to the Historic Savannah Foundation's suggestion that we simplify, since that has been our position on other buildings, to make the rear buildings subordinate.
That helps. Thank you.
Okay.
Capulet, I'm in agreement. I think simplification of the roof line would create that subordination. And I also believe that if you continue the hardy board down to at least the 4-inch level, it would be more, it's not falsifying what it is. And you see plenty of carriage houses that the siding actually does go down to the slab.
So you're saying when you say falsify, it's almost as if it's a building where the floor level is 2 feet above grade, and yet the door is that grade.
Is that grade? Correct. You're not stepping into the building. For instance, it's mimicking the main house. If you look at the main house, it has a brick foundation, and that's what it's aligning with. But I just don't think it's necessary. I think it adds, again, complexity that's not needed.
And that's not even 2 feet. That's like a foot. Can you
go back to the drawings?
Yeah, Ethan. And can you zoom out to all 4 elevations?
Okay.
These are all 4 sides of the carriage house, correct?
The two on the left are the main house. The two on the right are the carriage house from the lane elevation and the backyard elevation.
Do you have side elevations for the carriage house? Wait, front, right, left. Can we make a request that instead of right and left, we have west and east or something? Right depends on which side of the building you're standing on.
In this case, the right elevation would be the east. The left is the west elevation.
So it's from the point of view of the lane or from the front? You're hesitating.
Just look at the porch, the location of the porch.
From the inside, the applicant stated.
Okay. So it looks like to me that the rear gable, the front two gables are essentially decorative. In fact, that louver is labeled on the drawing false louver, I think, or fake louver, or can you zoom? I think it's not even a functional louver on the front elevation. Faux louver. So, I mean, not even functional. So the gable over the doorway on the little porch seems to make sense, but I would make a suggestion that we remove the 3 other gables since they're essentially aesthetic and add complexity to this building that belies its status relative to the main building.
All right, are we ready for a motion or is there further discussion?
You go to staff recommendations. Any other comments? This is Robin Williams. I make a motion that we approve for demolition of a non-contributing building and new construction, small parts one and two of a new carriage house, accessory dwelling unit located in the rear of 306 East 34th Street with the following conditions. One, staff recommendation, revise the railing height to not exceed 36 inches. Two, remove the gables from the front and rear elevations of the carriage house as per the drawings. And three, reduce the height of the stucco skirting to how?
To an acceptable level.
Yes, reduce the height of the stucco skirting to be less than the height of the brick on the main house. So that too is subordinate, and work with staff to come up with the appropriate exact height of that skirting. Because otherwise the proposed work is visually compatible and meets the standards.
Kirsten Connor, real quick, do you need to specify that they can leave that gable over the porch? Okay, I don't think that was included.
Sorry. I believe I got it right because there are three gables, one on the lane elevation and two on the front elevation.
Okay.
And
just wanted
I
to make sure
specified those two elevations. Okay. Yeah.
Any further discussion on the motion? Is there a second?
Kirsten Connor, I second.
Rebecca Fenwick, approve.
Virginia Mobley, approved.
Robin Williams, approve.
Darren Bagley-Heath, approve.
Kirsten Connor, approve.
Pam Miller, approve.
Jeff Nutrika, approve.
Motion passes. Thank you. Moving on, number 15, petition of Savannah Star, LLC, 16 East 37th Street.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This is Ethan Hageman presenting for staff once again. I want to make the comment that the petitioner is not currently present in the room or online. And for the record, staff has tried to contact the petitioner during the course of this meeting to remind them of the meeting. With that said, the petitioner today is requesting approval for the addition of a rear staircase to the rear of this contributing multifamily building located at 16 East 37th Street. The petitioner is also requesting approval for after the fact work of painting the historic bricks and removing the historic railings and balusters of the front porch seen here on Street View. So I'm going to, again, break this one down into separate parts to make it a little bit easier to digest. So I'm going to start with the rear porch. So they're asking for the an approval of an addition to this rear porch. What was approved back in 2022 was a staircase to the front first story of the rear, and then to create a railing and balusters for the second floor. The problems they ran into is there's going to be a third floor unit in the dormers seen up through here. So they need to find a way to create egress to meet code in order to allow residents up in this dormer unit. So the drawings they have submitted is they're going to stick with kind of the staircase to the front, to the first floor units. Then they've created a landing sort of deal where you're able to access the second floor units along with a staircase to that dormer unit. We do not have anything regarding visual compatibility. We find it to be visually compatible. It creates egress for all of the units, and it does not violate any of the design standards that we have in place. It will be made out of pressure treated and painted wood. So we are recommending approval for this portion of the new staircase in the rear. Here's the side elevation. With that said, I'm going to move on to the after fact portion of this project. Again, I'm going to break this one down into the painting of the historic bricks and then the removal of the railings and balusters. So yes, as you can see here, it was painted white from what it was currently existing on this street view. I want to give you guys a little bit of a timeline of this project. So like I said earlier, it was approved back in February 23rd at this meeting for rehabilitation of this property into multifamily units. Back at the January 25th meeting, for those that were here, it was brought to staff's attention that they had exceeded the scope of work. And the day after, staff began to initiate the process of contacting compliance, citing them, and getting them back into compliance. So as they're here before you today for after the fact. Regarding this paint and Secretary of the Interior standards, it has obviously been violated by painting the historic brick. But however, since it has been painted, we are recommending that they do not remove the existing paint in fear that it will cause further damage by removing the paint. They have already tried several methods of removal. We did a bit of research on this one, and we also used some of the preservation briefs that the Secretary of the Interior has. And for preservation brief one, it states even when unpainted masonry is appropriate, the retention of the paint may be more practical than a removal in terms of long-range preservation of the masonry. Going back to some of the methods they have used, I'll show you some of the videos they have sent staff. This is them power washing. And there's not much paint coming off. The other video that I'm about to show you is what causes staff to worry if they were to continue this method. And I think I just exited out of it. I'll pull it up. So here's another exhibit that the petitioner has sent in. This is them also trying to power wash. As you can see, it's going to erode the mortar when they even touch it. So this is what we're mainly concerned if they were to go about this option. We know there's other options that exist, such as paint stripping and that sort of removal. But we also worry, would it be as visually compatible as it would be right now if they were to keep the paint and just finish the coat that they're at? So that's where staff stands on this one. As far as paint, we recommend just keeping it as is. Moving on to the railing. This is the railing that existed before it was removed. We don't believe it to be the original railing, but it has been around for so long that it has taken historic significance, and therefore the Secretary of the Interior protects that railing and balusters. The railing is currently at 30 inches, which the dilemma we find ourselves in is since they've removed it, they now have to figure out a way to also meet code for multifamily, which is 42 inches tall. What we're recommending for this one is for the applicant to find a solution to rebuild this historic configuration of the balusters in the railing, and also to find a way to meet the International Building Code of 2018, which the City of Savannah follows. We've talked with the petitioner about possible solutions. One of the options that we gave them was, if you're familiar with the cafe known as Foxy Loxy, they have a similar problem where they don't technically meet the building code, but what they've installed is this metal railing up to that height behind the original railings. So there are some solutions here that we think to rebuild this railing and balusters while also meeting the code. We don't want to design the project for them. We want to make the petitioner get creative. So with that said, going into our recommendation, we are approving that rear addition of the staircase for the multifamily building. And then we're asking, or we're recommending approval for the after fact painting of the historic bricks and the removal of the front porch railings at 16 East 37th with the following condition: that they rebuild that historic front porch railing to historic configuration while finding a solution to meet the International Building Code of 2018. Are there any questions from the board?
Yeah, this is Robin Williams. I have a couple. First of all, can you go to the tab submittal packet, next tab over? And if you look at the picture on the upper balcony on the right, they replaced what they had as balusters. And it looks like they've tried to replicate the original pattern because that's what's there now.
Correct. And that's not what we would approve.
Right, because it's too thin.
Right.
Whether it's the right height. And by the way, Nan, can you go back to the historic photo or the pre-painting picture?
Yes.
Oh, was that Google? Okay. So two things. One, those railings are very likely to be original. This is a Japanese influence on Jeffersonian neoclassicism. So you'll find those back in the early 19th century. And this is a Jeffersonian neoclassical revival that was wildly popular in the early 20th. And a key characteristic of this kind of neoclassicism or neo-neoclassicism is red brick. And so maybe one solution is paint this color back on top of the... So if sandblasting or pressure washing is going to do irreparable harm to the mortar, if nothing else, then sad as it is, because if they painted the whole thing, the slightly lighter mortar joints will be lost. But nonetheless, the red color is actually integral to this style. And that railing was introduced to America through Jefferson. It's very, very definitely the original railing. And the part of the, compared to what they've put there now, you can see the sort of the heaviness of it compared to the thinness of what they've got there. So I would actually, the kind of solution you suggested at Foxy Loxy is replicate what was there and then do some kind of modern safety element.
Right.
Potentially be a good solution.
Yeah.
As opposed to making that at a thinner, taller scale. Mm-hmm.
And staff has been in contact with building code department, and the petitioner has been very responsive to this whole process. And we all have discussed that option as well. So they are quite aware of it as a solution to this possibility. We also talked about a possible netting behind the railing as well.
I have two questions. Did the petitioner reach out about the methods of paint removal prior to sending the videos, or?
I believe that was their first option, and that was their preferred option, was to use power washing. We sent them over numerous links through email about different types of paint removal. That is the only one to my knowledge that they have tried at the moment.
Just seems, there's a really wide variety of like poultice and, surface applied, stick, leave it, come back, pull it,
right.
Exam with even a wide variety of abrasion, right? That, you can have like a less, hazardous option and like the more intense option, right? And to not see any of those tried is disconcerting. Even in like an inconspicuous location, I just wonder if there is good communication, then maybe to emphasize that further as just, can we just cross that bridge before we say okay, no paint removal. You know, like, can we at least try that? I would suggest. My other question is regarding the dormers on the back. So I just was trying to understand the chronology. That those were approved in a prior submission. They were there already. So they've just been reskinned, I guess, because they have new siding, it looks like. But not those, but the ones on the back. Just so strange. Does this, can you walk in the lane on the street view?
No, I don't believe they actually have access from the lane.
Oh, there's no lane.
Yeah, wow. So technically this isn't their property. This is right. This address property. So they do
it's got right of way.
They have viewage. Right, exactly, from Drayden. Mm-hmm. But that you could not move.
So there was a unit up there, it looks like, already. Mm-hmm. Okay. Thank you.
Well, it looks like there was
Oh, wait, oh, yeah, this one.
What happened to all that?
Yes, I believe that. So my understanding, this is back from February of last year, but yes, you all approved to remove that, and then just to allow for the second floor porch without egress, and then first floor porch with this staircase. Yeah, I think it was. Yes. Yep. That's why they're back here requesting approval for this.
Kirsten Connor. I'd also like to make note that, and maybe this can be discussed in a pre-meeting of some kind of language in our ordinances, high pressure washing and sandblasting should never be recommended for historic brick or accepted. That's just, like, I was cringing when I saw that video. And I do agree with Rebecca that we need to discuss other methods for them to try. There are a plethora of methods out there that have been proven to work, but also it would be beneficial to know what kind of paint they used.
Yes, of course. Yeah, that's excellent points, Ms. Connor. And as staff, we also think that this board could possibly initiate the process to maybe strengthen our design standards where we put in place you cannot paint historic brick, because that's where this whole fiasco started, was due to there not being any color regulations within the streetcar historic district. The petitioner was under the impression that they could paint this building.
That's part of the Secretary of Interior standards.
This is Darren Bagley. So is it within our purview to be able to recommend that they seek a consultancy to find the least abrasive way to remove this brick, or to test various options, to seek out a consultant and work with them rather than just haphazardly make applications at various points of the building and see what is effective? I think they need some professional input.
Hi, Melanie Wilson, Executive Director. I think that what you could do is recommend that this item be continued, give the applicant an opportunity to seek out alternatives for removing the paint besides the power washing that we saw. And if he decides to use a consultant, that's on them, but you can at least continue this to give them an opportunity to do so. You don't have to recommend approval today.
Okay, and my second follow-up question to that is, before they begin the application of a paint removal process, would that be presented to the board prior to them doing it, so we could evaluate whether that was a appropriate use?
No, normally
rather than a carte blanche, I could normally
we wouldn't go into that level of detail with coming back to the board, but we can ask, and you can ask that the staff be present when they are going through the process of trying alternatives for removing the paint. I was kind of shocked when I saw the video of the sandblasting too. So you can have it in your recommendation that staff be present when they try it. But as far as you them coming back, that's extra time. If they come up with a solution that works, then I would rather that they come back with and we come back to you with a recommendation that says this is a solution that they come up with that works to deal with removing the paint, because as you indicated, that's always the first option.
Yeah. Okay.
Kirsten Connor, I have a question for you. Is it out of our purview to send resources that maybe the MPC staff could look at or send to future?
You can send resources to us. We welcome getting that information. Okay. I mean, you know, we don't know everything, and a lot of times you have access to stuff that we, you know, we don't always know about. So we would welcome you having that. And a lot of times applicants will ask, do we know of any products? I try to give them and encourage the staff to give people three so that we're not steering anybody to one thing. But mm-hmm. Yes, that would be very helpful.
Okay, thanks.
Pam Miller, I'd also like to see that we have the least amount of environmental impact and whatever they choose with that, as far as if that's possible. Because of the scope of the work that they have to do.
We will, like I said, I think that, you know, once they come up with alternatives, because there are some alternatives to remove paint that are very environmentally friendly. I think that they opted to go the least expensive way, which would have been trying to power wash it. But there are products that will remove paint that's environmentally sensitive. So we try not to get into that level of detail at this level. But, you know, I would hope that they would consider doing that, especially if they are listening or happen to listen to the video, audio of this meeting.
Jenny Mobley, is it possible or in asking them to try different methods that if that fails after a sincere effort, that the color of the bricks be altered or painted to mimic the original color?
I mean, you can make a recommendation, you know, if you are going to allow them to keep the units or the units of brick or that those areas that were painted, you all can, I mean, they're asking you for forgiveness. So you can make a recommendation that that would be, you know, kind of as follows, that they use that they consider using alternatives for solutions to remove the paint from the brick. And you strongly encourage them to do that. And that if that solution does not work, that they have to paint the brick back in the color to mimic what was there from the standpoint of that red, which is more Jeffersonian.
My only concern with that, this is Darren Bagley-Heath, is that painting over with a new color may be the best cost alternative rather than the best alternative. So I think we have to try one solution before we attempt to examine another solution.
Well, you can ask them to come. You can always ask them to come back. We can always have them come back and postpone it for 30 days, give them 30 days to go through the process to remove it. If something happens and they can't and they contact us and say nothing is working, because the question is really what kind of paint did they use to start trying to paint the brick?
Can we continue it with them providing the information of the kind of paint and the processes that they are trying to use?
I think you can continue this item. The question is, do you continue it and say, we're going to continue it for 30 days. Within that period of time, you need to look at alternatives for removing the paint besides power washing, and you need to give staff a list of what paints you use to try to deal with painting the bricks. One of the things that one of my goals for this year is to make sure that we do have things that kind of highlight the things that shouldn't be done. That's part of the secretary standards. We know that, but a lot of times people in the community don't. So what they look at is the ordinance. And there could be, you know, kind of call outs, or we could have some cheat sheets that say you can't do this in these districts. And that's one of the things that we will definitely make sure that we do.
I guess Kathy Levine, my question is, how did they even get that far? How did they paint it without any notice? I understand that they called up and said, but I mean, that's the thing we have to stop.
Right. So
Kirsten, I'm sorry. I was just going to say, because I live right next down a couple blocks, they painted it pretty fast and they kept going.
So going back to the ordinance, Ms. Wilson's exactly correct that a lot of times people that don't necessarily have the most experience in this, they don't necessarily know all the Secretary of the Interior standards. What they're looking at is our NUZO website, and they don't see that color is required, so therefore start spray painting it.
But to answer your question, is my understanding, didn't code enforcement turn, did somebody turn them in?
So we
Yeah. So, you know, when that happens, it's one of those things where, you know, we don't go out and cruise, all the historic districts to say, hey, this person's in violation. A lot of times we get, information from code enforcement. So thank goodness for the city of Savannah's code enforcement team being a little bit more alert. And we've been working with them to have them be a little bit more vigilant when they see things that are not in compliance. But, you know, as Ms. Connor indicated, they move pretty quick. And it's not good when somebody sprays. I have a problem when you're dealing with historic. If you're going to paint it, you know, don't spray it. I mean, there are different things that you can do if you decide to paint, to me, any brick. But it always cringe when I see the folks out with the spray gun, because you get a whole different.
Well, there's a lot of prep work going into painting this. So somebody knew something was going to happen. And it wasn't 2 days. It was, you know, 2 weeks easily.
Well, that's true. So, but we would not have known that had happened unless someone contacted us to say they're in violation. And there are a lot of
But I think you're right. It's code enforcement. Because I'm sure code enforcement went up and down that street and just didn't catch it. That's so. Right.
Pam Miller, I just have a question. Is there a way if there's not a method for them to safely remove the paint, is there a way that we can ask them that in an inconspicuous spot on the brick to paint the red that they're going to paint? Because I really am not familiar with what red paint over white spray paint might look like, and it might be worse than what it is now. So
it might not look great. And to be candid with you, if they do end up having to go back with a red as what was recommended, they would have to prep it to make sure that it went on the appropriate red. They wouldn't just be able to spray it over the gray.
That was my concern, but, is that it wouldn't have to look.
They would have to go through prepping the brick in order to ensure that they achieved the color that was recommended. Let's hope that they can get, you know, let's hope that they can get the paint that they have on there off.
Pam Miller, would that be a two-step process for us then? I mean, the first one is to see if they could get it off and then bring it back with the sample of the red?
Well, that would be what we would end up doing. During this 30-day period of time, while we're continuing, we would talk to them about some of the recommended alternatives that Ms. Connor indicated that she knew about and that Ms. Fenwick knew about, to see if they would try those. To see if they work. And if they do work, then we would encourage them to move forward and remove the paint. If they don't work, then they still are going to have to incur costs because they have to properly prep the building if they're allowed to paint it that red. And, you know, we could ask them to do a block so we could see what it looked like. But, you know, they can also color match. I mean, technology is a wonderful thing these days.
Are there any other questions for staff? Are we ready to entertain a motion? Do you feel confident in taking it two steps versus one step?
Public comment.
Oh, I'm so sorry, public. Yes. Excuse me. Are there any comments from the public?
Ryan Jarles, Historic Savannah Foundation. I'll just start with one simple comment about the contact between staff and this person. No matter what, when you're purchasing a building in a local historic district, it's much like purchasing a house in a neighborhood with an HOA. There are rules and you need to follow them, and you should become clear in your own right on what you can and cannot do to buildings in the area you live in. We have InCode. It's very simple to look at. If no one's looked at it, I'll go over it with you. If the petitioner was here, I would given my card. Our ARC is concerned by, again, the blatant disregard for the integrity of this building, the historic district, and the historic materials on this building. And there are many preservation resources available to owners of historic buildings. There's also a clear difference between a color change and a material change. This was a change of material on the exterior of the building, including paint on top of brick. We would also just like to state that we would suggest that no other alternative be looked at other than the safe removal of the paint from this brick. Power washing is never the answer when it comes to historic brick, so I don't know where they got that idea. There are a number of preservation professionals in the city. For instance, one is sitting in this room from Landmark Preservation Consulting right there, who have experience with this task and could help this person, as well as many people on this board. Along with the paint removal, we would also like to see the safe and appropriate repointing of the brickwork and the returning of the historic railing. Thank you.
Thank you.
My name is Ellie Isaacs, and as Ryan said, I'm here on behalf of Landmark Preservation Consulting. I'm not going to read the entire thing that I wrote because we've already kind of discussed half of the things that I was going to write to fight for us to take this paint off this brick. So I'm a partner in a local preservation consulting company which specializes in conditions assessments and provides historically appropriate means and methods for the cleaning and repair of historic materials. The review of this project has brought me significant disdain due to the blatant disregard for the correct preservation treatment methods. This project is in direct violation, as you all know, of the Secretary of Interior Standards for Rehabilitation. And as we've already discussed, there's multiple resources. I'm not going to quote them like I was originally going to. Preservation Brief 1 and 6, as well as the book that's called, that's titled The Secretary of Interior Standards for the Treatment of Historic Properties, that have specific language regarding these problems of painting historically unpainted brick and the proper ways to clean them on page 41 and 42. If the reasoning for the painting of the building was that the brick was old, moldy, and discolored, taking the time to research the correct cleaning methodology should have been sought and would have easily remedied the problem not only at a significantly lower cost than painting the entire building, but also protected the integrity of the historic materials. In the age of the internet, the blatant disregard of correct preservation methodologies is a choice. The unpainted masonry veneer, as Robin stated, again, I'm not going to repeat basically what he said, that the veneer is a historically significant and distinctive material of this building, providing character and integrity and should have been preserved correctly. Therefore, I am also here to advocate for the complete removal of the painted coating from the historically unpainted masonry using the gentlest means possible. Once the paint has been removed, obviously it can be cleaned and mortar should be then selectively repointed using the correct mortar and per the MPC's mortar test sample policy to reverse the damage that has definitely occurred, as you saw from those terrible videos. Allowing this project to move forward without calling for the complete removal of the painted coating would be a disservice not only to this building, but also to the district that we aim to protect. I am also here to request that staff review and revise the ordinances in all district overlays to include specific language to prohibit painting historically unpainted masonry, to ensure that this never happens again. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Any other public? All right. I guess we'll now enter into discussion. At this time, all public debate is closed and no further comments will be accepted. Discussion?
Rebecca Fenwick, it sounds like we can make it a condition to explore other paint removal options, and I would want to say working with staff for the gentlest means possible to include a poultice, and you know, kind of beyond that, outside of the motion, I mean, I think there are resources that we can share, so.
I definitely agree with that. I'm wholesale removal myself. And I think if staff would be willing and, you know, to work with the applicant and offering some guidance for the removal of the paint, 30 days. Is that adequate time, or do we think 60?
Mm-hmm. So I have just a question for the two folks from the public that came and spoke as experts as well. Will you be able to provide staff with materials on appropriate brick removal, paint removal from brick? Because I think, as was stated earlier, that multiple sources from various experts in the community is essential to help these people come up with the appropriate remedy.
Yeah.
Well, and it was, the director shared too that that was an acceptable addition to the motion.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
Are we going to leave this to staff review, or are we going to do a continuation?
I see it as a continuance with, that's what I'm asking, 30 or 60 days.
Okay.
What do you feel comfortable with?
Up to 60.
Up to 60 days.
I would, Kirsten Connor, I'd prefer 30. The longer that paint sits on there, the worse it's going to get.
True. All right. Would anybody try to make a motion?
This is Ethan Hageman. We're just going to check on the next meeting so we can put a date on this motion.
So it's date specific.
The next meeting is going to be May 24th or April 26th. Excuse me.
All right. Anybody care to make a motion?
Your mic's not on.
Yours is on.
Okay. I make a motion we continue the project at 16 East 37th Street. Let me just read this. Approval of the addition. Okay, maybe I'll start over. Is there any, we don't need to have any discussion about the staircase?
I think code's going to have a lot of discussion about
all
that
right.
staircase.
Okay. Got it. Yep. So I recommend we approve the rear staircase at 16 East 37th Street and continue the after-the-fact review of the painting of the historic bricks with the condition that staff work with the petitioner to identify and test the use of paint removal methods that are of the gentlest means possible, to include means that are less gentle if needed, both all of which should be in an inconspicuous location, and that other community partners could be engaged. Staff's condition should also be continued to rebuild the historic front porch railing to the historic configuration while finding a solution related to code. That was long.
Is there a second?
Virginia Mobley, second.
Question about the motion?
Kirsten, I'm sorry, I missed it. Did you mention the 30 days?
Yes. So it is continued till April 26 meeting.
You
want
to repeat that?
Do I want to? No. I will if I have to.
Anybody need a repeat? No. Okay. Is there a second?
Virginia Mobley
second. Oops, wait a second. Wait a second.
Just from the standpoint of the way that the motion was read, it kind of sounded like the emphasis was for staff to deal with working with them to come up with a solution versus the applicant coming up with a solution. So that would probably be my only tweaks, is just to make it very clear that the motion is to get the applicant to look at alternatives for removing the brick the paint that's on the brick using a variety of methods with the assistance of staff and other experts in the community. And that during the trial of the brick removal, you want staff present to ensure that the appropriate methods are used for that paint removal. So I just kind of throw that out, but I think that's what I got from what you said, and that the item be continued into the April 26th meeting, and that the rails be continued as well, so that it gives them an opportunity to come back with a solution that helps meet building code.
I actually think that I would also amend my motion to say that we would like to review, this group would like to review the findings of the paint removal.
It would come back automatically. Okay. With us continuing it to the April 26th okay. meeting, then we would come back with the recommendation. We would come back with what we discover going through this process. So you're automatically going to get the findings just by the fact that you have okay. continued the item for them to go through this process. So you don't have to repeat that. You're automatically going to get that information. Okay.
So, Rebecca, I would also add, complying to the Secretary of Interior standards for the treatment of the paint removal, masonry, paint removal from masonry, historic masonry.
Remember, you're going to have to make a second motion because this one has already been seconded, so you're going to have to do an amendment. Yeah.
Okay, so there's a motion on the floor.
Right, there is already okay. a motion on the floor.
So there isn't a second. So if there's no second, then we can recreate. I thought I stopped you.
There was a second.
All right.
Rebecca Fenwick, decline.
Decline. Virginia Mobley, decline.
Darren Bagley, he's decline.
Kirsten Connor, decline.
Pam Miller, decline.
Jeff Notrika, decline.
Okay.
All right. Are we ready for a restated or a new motion?
I will do my best. Okay. Rebecca Fenwick. I make a motion to approve the addition of a rear staircase at 16 East 37th Street and continue the after-the-fact painting review of painting historic bricks and the removal of the front porch railings at 16 East 37th Street with the following conditions: that the applicant explore gentler means of paint removal and work with staff to find those solutions, and that staff will be present when those solutions are explored with the findings to come back to this board, and that the Secretary of the Interior Standards are utilized in that process, and that the applicant rebuild the historic front porch railing to the historic configuration while meeting code.
And use April 26th.
And use the resources in the community as needed.
April 26th.
With a date certain for continuance till April 26th.
Kirsten Connor, I second.
Virginia Mobley, second.
Move to vote. Jeff?
Jeff Notrika, approve.
Pam Miller, approve.
Kirsten Connor, approve.
Darren Bagley-Heath, approve.
Probably approve.
Rebecca Fenwick, approve.
Terrific. Thank you. Thank you, everybody.
Thank you. This is Ethan Higman. Staff can set up a meeting with the community resources and the petitioners so we can all further discuss moving forward on this project.
Moving on to the petition of Shed Architecture, 317-323 East 32nd Street. Thank you.
The applicant is requesting approval for new construction, part one and part two, for a new three-story mixed-use building for the property located at 317 through 323 East 32nd Street. The lots at this location are all currently vacant. I'm sure this project looks familiar to everybody. The first time you all saw it was in July of 2022, and most recently you saw it in last month at February. You all voted to continue parts one and two with the following conditions. And that was, number one was to provide window details indicating window simulated divided light muttons are 7/8 inch wide or less and simulated traditional putty glazing, and there's a spacer bar. And so they updated their specs to show that all those standards are met here. Number two, revise the storefront base to wood, bronze, glazed brick, or tile to meet the standard. And actually what they did instead was just completely removed the storefront base from the project. So the aluminum storefront sits on the ground now, on grade. So provider three was provider railing detail. And what they actually did was they revised the railing so that you don't have to have the 4-inch baluster spacing anymore. So they made it a bit more of a lower contemporary design there, raised this parapet wall here. Provide the light fixture specifications, which they've done here. Provide a fence detail, including material, which they have done here. Incorporate transparent features over a minimum of 50% of all ground floor facades. So here are two of the facades. This is the 32nd Street, and here's the rear. So they've done that. Number seven. Number seven was the upper two floors of the south facade shall have fenestration that's more harmonious with the fenestration on the east and north upper two floors. So what they did here, so this is the lane facade. So they've changed the design of this corner, which we'll talk about it in a minute, but they've added all of these windows here, and then they added these windows here. Number eight. The transoms over the doors on the north facade shall be full width and in harmony with the other transoms on the building. So they've done those here. In addition to the enumerated conditions, staff found that the Habersham Street facade has been redesigned. And that's this facade here. I'm sure you all remember this entrance was centered on the building, and now it's been moved over to the corner here. It's not an angled corner entrance, it's just on the furthest most bay. The entrance has been moved off center towards the lane with the awning that it wraps around the corner of the building into the lane. The portion of the building is also accentuated vertically with board and batten and first floor banding with a contrasting design to the banding on the brick portions of the building. The drawings indicate that the banding provides a location for future signage. And lastly, the access structure above the cornice line has been removed from the project. All right, so all that being said, with regard to the part one standards and visual compatibility and height, again, the roof access structure, which was the tallest point at 44 feet, 8 inches, has been removed from the project. The reduced height and scale, staff finds visually compatible. With regards to openings, the fenestration on all facades has been redesigned. The ground floor facades now contain 50% fenestration, and more windows have been added at upper floors. Lastly, the transoms above the doors on the 32nd Street facade now span the full width of the doors. Staff finds the redesign of the fenestration visually compatible. Again, two facades, three, and then the fourth facade. All right, with regard to the main entrance here, so projections, entrance projections. Again, it has a wrapping awning and the entrance location is accentuated by different banding and different material above extending to the roof line. This area of the roof is now taller than the brick portion of the building. You can see how it extends up 2 feet above the brick portion here to further accentuate the corner of the building and the entrance, and staff finds the redesign to be visually compatible. One standard that we didn't see a dimension for is that storefront glazing shall be inset a minimum of 4 inches from the face of the building. We just need a dimension on the section that shows that, where the section is, but we just need a dimension for that. And then awnings are required to have 8 feet clearance above the right-of-way, so we need a dimension on that. Shed roofs are required to be pitched between 2 and 6, a pitch of between 2 and 6. So we need to know what that pitch is there. And then, we need an electrical meter location, on the site plan as well as HVAC location, which we presume is going to be on the roof, because there's not a lot of site location, but we need to know where that'll be located. With regard to part two, visual compatibility of materials. So the main building material is brick, which is that brown material you can see here. And then there's metal panels, which is one of the secondary building materials. And then metal board and batten siding, which is any of the vertical material that you can see. And then there's also precast stone banding and sill. And staff finds the materials to be visually compatible. With regard to design standards and exterior walls, again, the building is proposed to be brick, metal panels, and metal board and batten siding. The HPC may approve alternate materials that are not listed as prohibited. So metal panels and board and batten siding are not listed as prohibited. A staff finds them appropriate in this context. There's a lot of single family historic context. There's not much commercial, especially contributing historic context. These materials have performed satisfactorily in the local climate. So staff is recommending approval of the use of these built materials on this building in this context. With regard to fencing, the specification says this is a steel fence, but the fencing materials allowed are wood, iron, brick, true stucco over concrete blocks, smooth fiber cement, and extruded aluminum. So we're recommending that this fence be changed to extruded aluminum. Sorry, there it is. Staff is recommending approval with the following conditions to be submitted to staff for final review and approval because the proposed work is otherwise visually compatible and meets the standards. And that is, storefront glazing must be inset 4 inches. The awnings must have 8 feet of clearance. 3, the shed roof structure must have a pitch between 2.12 and 6.12. 4, provide the electric meter location. 5, provide HVAC location and ensure it's screened from the view of the street, which would pretty much be any of the 4 views would be likely visible from the street if it's not down behind a parapet. 6, revise the fence material to be extruded aluminum to meet the standard. And we did receive one letter of opposition that was attached to your agenda. We talked about that letter in the pre-meeting, and it centered around concerns about parking, almost exclusively, and the lack of parking. And I don't know if there's required parking for this site, and I'm sure the applicant's been through the site plan review process, so I'm sure that he can talk about that when he comes up as well and talk about what their plans are for parking, even though it's not in your purview.
So I'll be happy to answer any questions.
Questions for staff?
What did you say the proposed fence material is?
Steel.
Oh, steel. Okay.
Kathy Levine, I've got a question for staff about signage.
Mm-hmm.
They have the signage sign in the lane. That?
Yeah, they won't, when the time comes, they won't be able to do that. It says future signage location.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, when the time comes, signage is not allowed on the lane. So we'll have to do something
that
different.
That might alter their design, though.
Probably a good question for them.
Okay.
Anything else for me?
Okay, thank you.
Madam Chair, I just wanted to let you know I'm going to have to leave at 6 o'clock today.
Thank you.
Will the petitioner please come forward, state your name for the record?
Yes, Shedrick Coleman, Shed Architecture, here with my client, Craig Gordon. Good afternoon. We are in agreement with all of the staff recommendations and take no issue with any.
Thank you. Are there any questions for the petitioner? Kathy Levine, I've got a question. I think the design's come a long way. I was curious about your you moving the centered entrance to the corner. I think it gives the lane a lot of prominence versus 32nd Street, but I was just curious about the thought about that. And do you have a dimension for the canopy? And I think those are all the questions.
Well, first, the canopy is right now 8 foot 8 inches clear from the sidewalk, so it already
requires,
and it comes out 3 feet. It's
okay.
A 3 foot canopy.
Okay.
As far as moving the entry, after going through numerous iterations of the center section and not being satisfied with a simple bump out, it was, and a comment being made that the elevation coming from the south was very weak, where because it would be seen that I felt moving the entry to the corner and creating an opportunity for that expression to turn the corner so that as you come north, you would actually see some continuity of the building elevation turn that corner was why that was done. And I think it created a stronger opportunity to make that entry prominent and also not make the building look like it was an afterthought coming up from the southern elevation. So that was why the move happened and offered that offset, off-center situation, which I think was stronger than trying to move it the other way.
Does that set back?
It
looks like it's set back just
it's
the
only,
block of the brick.
It's basically about the brick. Just and the, that material change in the height is the way that's accented, yes.
And then how long does the canopy run? What's the length of the canopy on
the
both
canopy,
sides?
It runs back along the backside to where the stair tower ends. So it basically goes along that material change.
To
the material change on each of those elevations. So on the Habersham Street side, it runs to the material change at the brick, and along the lane side, it does the same thing following the storefront and then the stair tower piece that's there.
All right, and knowing that you can't have signage, you wouldn't redesign that. You wouldn't.
No, the band was there already, but it became an opportunity for signage. So that note was just that if a signage was anywhere, it would be in that band. So if it's not on the lane, that's not a significant issue for the client. I think the band is important regardless of whether there's signage there or not.
Okay, and then one last question, I'm done. Do these windows align horizontally? It looks like the corner, the windows are slightly raised, or will they
No,
align?
They align. They do align. Everything's in alignment.
Okay. Thank you. Mm-hmm. Any other questions for the petitioner? No. Are there any questions from the public? Any members of the public who would like to speak? Excuse me.
Ryan Charles, Historic Savannah Foundation. I'm just going to start by apologizing to the architect for not having provided this comment last month. Our ARC brought it up this past Monday. Our ARC's comment is specifically regarding the vertical metal board and batten. They determined that there are very few instances of this material existing in this form. There is one example. I believe it's 2416 Abercorn Street, and it's along the roof line. It's a board and batten metal. Our ARC just feels that it, if we weren't to find an aluminum siding or a corrugated metal siding or metal panels appropriate, as the ordinance states, then how should we find this material appropriate? And they stated that although it is not a strictly prohibited material, they just find it not compatible within this area within the district. Thank you.
Anybody else from the public like to comment? Would the petitioner like to respond to the public comment?
The use of the metal board and batten was mainly a situation of trying to get something that was going to be maintenance-free on a building of this type. I think the change from the brick and going to a wood board and batten on a building like this was not appropriate. I at first wanted to use a hardy plank system of board and batten, and I was told that that was not approvable, and that's why I went with the metal situation. So that's how I ended up there.
Thank you. Any other comments? We'll now enter board discussion at this time. Public debate is closed and no further comments will be accepted. Discussion from the board? No discussion.
Rebecca Fenwick, I was just going to echo what you had said earlier that, I mean, the design has come a long way, and I'm really happy to see the southern elevation given more detail. And, I, you know, that's a huge improvement, especially thinking about driving north and the small building adjacent. So.
Anybody else?
Kirsten Connor, I tend to agree with what Ryan had said from HSF, but I was curious with other board members how you feel about that metal siding and whether or not it is compatible.
It's my understanding that, Kathy Levine, that the metal siding mimics, and please correct me if I'm wrong, wood when I was looking at the material packet.
Could we maybe flip to, is there a spec page? Thank you.
And that's a good question for the applicant because I didn't get that impression, but I think it would be good to ask him if he intended it to mimic wood. Because, yeah, that would be. Sorry, I just have to find it. Okay. Go ahead while I'm scrolling.
Well, presently, what I submitted to Leo was a smooth material, but it does come with a pattern. And if it would be more advantageous from the standpoint of the board that it has a mimic of a wood pattern, that material is available in that configuration. I just felt that usually we want smooth siding when you're trying to have a material that's not wood. I don't think mimicking the wood was really an advantage there. Yeah. So that's why it is smooth as proposed. But definitely it's supposed to look like smooth board and batten siding. Only, yes.
Okay. Rebecca Fenwick, it seems to me like this is these products on this sheet anyway of this this material is attempting to mimic wood in the that it's not monochrome, that there seems to be some variation in the finish. I think in general, visually compatible that material, you know, materials should appear as they are. And I realize faux finish is a historic practice, but not in this setting, right? For whatever that's worth.
My question, this is Darren Bagley. So hardy board is not permitted in this context, which in so many other contexts it is permitted. And that just seems to...
Yes.
Is that correct?
I thought composite was an acceptable material in new construction.
It is. I don't know. Maybe staff?
No. Okay. Composite? Composite siding?
Not hardy panel. No. Is that what you're that what you're referring to? No, it's listed as not allowed.
Okay. Okay. Well, that's that.
I mean, I do have some concern about the entrance being placed on the lane. I mean, so you're really calling attention again to the lane as a primary street versus 32nd Street. Does it bother me? The second iteration of the design with the center design, to me was more, I thought it gave more prominence to Henderson Street versus 32nd Street. I thought the building was brought together with an entirely brick facade versus that whole corner being this metal material. I like the metal for the accents on the oriel window, as well as the elements on the roof. I don't think I'm comfortable with the scale of this material. The masonry I thought would be more visually compatible to the historic nature of the district. Any further comments? Anybody else have any feelings about the sign band? Yeah. Any further discussion? Do I hear a motion? Would anybody like to entertain a motion? The board, excuse me. I'm sure the public. Okay.
Could you pull up staff recommendations, please?
Yep.
This is Darren Bagley. I'm going to propose that we approve staff recommendations as written 1 through 6.
Is there a second?
Miller, a second.
Call for a vote. Rebecca?
Rebecca Fenwick, approve.
Virginia Mobley, approve.
Darren Bagley-Heath, approve.
Kirsten Connor, approve.
Ann Miller, approve.
Jeff Nutrika, approve.
Motion carries. Thank you. Moving to item number 10, approved staff reviews.
One more. You have one more.
I'm so sorry, Ward Architecture. I apologize. Moving to number 17, petition of Ward Architecture, 202 East 38th Street.
All right, so the applicant is requesting approval for a variance recommendation, but if you want to stop, I'm good. Just letting you know. We're good? Okay. Oh, all right. Finish. The applicant is requesting approval for a variance recommendation request to the Zoning Board of Appeals for a rear yard setback variance for the property located at 202 East 38th Street. I'm sure this all looks familiar to you. You all have approved it before. It's exactly the same project that you saw. Nothing has changed.
The setback variance seeks to reduce the required rear yard setback from 20 feet. That's here when we talk about the rear yard, from 20 feet to 5 feet, to allow the two-story carriage house to be constructed with the same design as was previously approved by you all. It was unclear at the time of the certificate appropriateness review that this variance was going to be necessary. I am going to go through what the applicant said, and he can elaborate more on it when he comes up. But per the applicant, in our initial design and programming phase, we used zoning section 5.12.5 footnote 2, which says, for buildings oriented to north-south streets, the minimum rear yard setback may be reduced to 5 feet. So when we were all reviewing it, we reviewed this carriage house as if it was oriented to a north-south street. But then as it turns out, when they went in to the city plans examiner for a building permit, they found the standard that says section 8.74A2, which says an attached accessory dwelling unit shall meet the setback standards for the principal dwelling. So that means because it was attached, it has to have a 20-foot rear yard setback. And then it has to be separated by 10 feet. So obviously all of that doesn't work together if you do all of that. So ultimately what needs to happen is they need a rear yard setback variance to keep this configuration that you all issued a COA for before. The variance will help preserve the historic building pattern in this neighborhood. Historically, the three properties at this intersection had accessory structures in the rear yard, which faced Abercorn Street, while the primary dwelling faced East 38th Street. Several properties to the south still retain this configuration. Furthermore, historically, there was a two-story wood frame carriage house at this exact location on this property, or possibly even closer to the rear property line, for which the curb still exists. All right, so with regard to the background of this project, you all approved this on August 24th, 2022 with conditions that were met when staff stamped the permit drawings. One, move the two-story carriage house back from the west property line to have a 3 foot setback. So the building was moved back 3 feet here to have a 3 foot setback here. Two, add a note to the drawings that the fiber cement siding is to have a smooth finish. Three, the seam height and panel width of the standing seam metal roof are to match that of the contributing building's roof. The drawings provided in this middle packet reflect the conditions of the approval. Therefore, the design of the building has already been approved, and again, nothing has changed with this request. No visual compatibility or design standards are therefore addressed, only the variance criteria apply. So I'm going to go through those variance criteria. The first one is general consistency. So the variance shall be consistent with the intent of this ordinance and the comprehensive plan and shall not be injurious to the neighborhood or otherwise detrimental to the public health, safety, or welfare. The ordinance and the comprehensive plan intend to maintain a community that is historic and provide an excellent quality of life for its citizens. This variance is consistent with that intent. Also multiple historic and also those that still currently exist, examples of a similar arrangement of carriage house type structures exist in the immediate context, therefore not causing injury to the neighborhood by further adding to its character in areas such as this where there's not access to a lane. I think that's one of the keys here is this building, although it faces a east-west street, is on a corner and does not have access to a lane where you could have a carriage house where you could drive in and come around and get into the carriage house. Special conditions. Special conditions or circumstances exist which are peculiar to the land, buildings, or structures involved, which are not applicable to other lands, buildings, or structures in the same zoning district. Again, this parcel does not have access to a lane and is on a corner. And that does not result as not a result of the action of the applicant. the special condition or circumstance is not purely financial in nature. So the lack of a lane or a corner lot does not create additional profit or save money for the applicant. Literal interpretation of the provisions of the regulations would deprive the applicant of rights commonly enjoyed by other properties in the same zoning district under the terms in the ordinance and would result in unreasonable hardship on the applicant. And I know I'm repeating myself, but multiple historic examples of similar arrangement of carriage house structures, and I use carriage house loosely because there are all sorts of building forms that are accessory type buildings. Structures exist in the immediate context. Therefore, the regulations would deprive the applicant of rights commonly enjoyed by those in the same zoning district. The minimum variance. The variance, if granted, shall be the minimum variance necessary to make possible the reasonable use of lands, buildings, or structures. The current distance from the rear of the main building to the rear property line is 22 feet 6 inches. So from the back of this building to the rear property line is 22 feet 6 inches. If a 20-foot setback is required, a building would not be possible. The proposed building is only 13 feet 6 inches wide as it already is. It's a very narrow building. So this is definitely the minimum to make this building usable. Special privilege not granted. The variance shall not confer on the applicant's property any special privilege that is denied by this ordinance to other lands, buildings, or structures in the same zoning district. One more time, there are multiple historic examples of similar arrangement of carriage house structures in the immediate context. Therefore, special privilege is not conferred. Staff is recommending approval for a variance recommendation request to the Zoning Board of Appeals to reduce the rear yard setback from 20 feet to 5 feet for the property located at 202 East 38th Street as requested because the variance criteria are met. I'll be happy to answer any questions.
Any questions for staff? Will the petitioner please come forward and state their name for the record?
Oh, I'm sorry. One more thing. My apologies. I did receive a phone call just like about an hour before the meeting of the immediate neighbor objecting to the project.
The same one that presented previous?
Yes. Yes.
Same issues?
Yes.
Do you want to remind, I'm sorry, do you want to remind the board of the issues?
Okay, are you going to say one?
No,
they'll get to public comment.
Yeah. I'm not on this project. Is there another one?
That's what this is.
That one got continued.
That was a tree on the corner?
I own 1701.
I think we might need a vote before Rebecca leaves for quorum. I apologize.
I'm really sorry. Yeah, you'd still have a quorum. Okay. I don't know if
it's Jeff still here. Yeah.
I'm sorry. I thought you were talking about this one.
Sir, you had stepped out when the continued agenda was talked about. You had stepped out when the continued agenda was approved.
I've been here the whole time. I never left here.
I thought you were standing outside of this, at a point when she was still here.
We're very, very sorry.
Yeah.
Sorry about that. Where were we at?
We were discussing your phone call with the adjacent neighbor.
Okay.
Yeah. So you'd probably be better at explaining what Ms. Etz's concerns were, right?
I can try.
Okay. Hey, I'm gonna let Mr. Ward do that.
Hello, my name is Josh Ward with Ward Architecture and Preservation. Thank you, Leah, for trying to explain this project. We've kind of gotten into a pickle, I guess. First, let me address the neighbor's concerns that you're asking about. From what I understand, when I met with her previous to the first meeting I came to, it was really her concerns were based on views from her second floor apartment. And so we did, I think, discuss that with the board and accommodated that by pushing the building back some. But I believe that was their primary concern. I mean, what I understand is that really views are what she was worried about. Not necessarily the mass of the building or the materials, but just that it was going to block her views.
Leah, do you concur? I mean, he's a little biased.
Yeah, I mean, I remember her saying she did not want to, I mean, basically she said she did not want a building in that location.
Okay.
And
I just want to make sure her comment, she called you specifically that her comments.
Yeah, she didn't really say much today other than she objected. She's very ill.
Okay.
So she didn't have much to actually say, but that she was still, other than that she was still objecting, even though, and I reminded her that you all, you know, made a condition to move the building back to help accommodate that view shed for her. Reminded her about that.
Great, thank you.
Yeah, I was trying to summarize. In essence, she didn't want the building, and there wasn't, to me, a very good reason for it. So, anyways, so the reason why we're here today is because the various zoning regulations that are affect this property. It's a unique property. It's a corner lot, and the variance will allow what we feel is an appropriate use of the property. As I mentioned, as Leah mentioned, there historically was a accessory building in the location where this proposed one is going. There's numerous historic precedents around this area that shows the similar configuration where there was no lane. You had the primary dwelling unit facing a east-west street, but the accessory structures all faced north-south street. So again, we're not inventing some new form or site layout. This is something that existed and still exists in the neighboring blocks. So anyways, if you allow this recommendation, we still have to go to the ZBA to get final approval of this. So this is the first step of that process.
Are there any questions for the petitioner? Are there any members of the public that would like to comment? All right, we will now enter into board discussion. At this time, all public debate is closed and no further comments will be accepted.
I'd like to make a comment since this is across the street from my house.
This is discussion. This
and
is for you.
My property was pictured in their petition. My garage and an apartment have been there over 100 years. They were original. That is the original location of this property. At 202, the structure that they are referring to as being historical was torn down, the pad removed, dirt in its place in the 70s. So if we're going to you go back and say it's a historic, we're restoring the history, does that mean that we go to 37th and Price and put up the concrete plant? Or we go to 40th and Abercorn and put the mechanic shop back? We have to move with today's standards, because life has changed. I mean, the access to this, to the property, is going to be curtailed for safety reasons. If they want to build the structure, then move it back from the property line. But they're cutting, there is not another carriage house on that block. There's a pad, there are two pads for garages, but they're, that were there, but there's never been carriage houses. And I've been there a long, long time.
All right. So we're still talking about the variance, though.
If they can move it back further than the 5 feet.
I don't believe they can. Correct me if I'm wrong, but that space is way too tight for them to be able to move it back.
I realize the space is tight, but you're trying to put a square peg in a round hole. And sometimes you just can't.
I feel like we've already had this discussion before, and that's how this got approved.
And I had this same discussion when it went before for the setback. And this was not part of that discussion.
The variance was not.
The setback from the property, the back property line, was not part of the discussion. We were only talking about the face of Abercorn.
But today we're just discussing the recommendation for the variance.
Oh, I understand. We're talking about the variance. But I mean, if you can move it back two more feet.
Move what back?
The building that you want to put up.
Move it back from where?
From the back property line. Instead of a 5 foot, a 7 or an 8 foot variance.
But we've already discussed that. This is for the variance, for the recommendation for a variance.
Yeah, it can't be moved. There's nowhere to move it to.
Okay, but again, you're putting trying to force something into a piece of land that just can't contain it.
I understand what you're saying. Is there any further discussion? Mm-hmm. All right. Would somebody like to make a motion?
Kirsten Connor, I motion to approve staff recommendations for approval of the variance. Approval for a variance recommendation request to the Zoning Board of Appeals.
Is there a second?
Pam Miller, I'll second.
Let's start with the vote. Virginia?
No.
Darren Bagley-Heath, approve.
Kirsten Connor, approve.
Pam Miller, approve.
Motion carries. Thank you.
See you, Josh.
All right, moving on to approved staff reviews. A list of staff reviews is attached to the agenda. Are there any questions of staff regarding these approved reviews? Is there a motion to acknowledge the review?
Darren Bagley-Heath, a motion to acknowledge the approved staff reviews.
Is it just a vote of acknowledgement?
Just an acknowledgement.
Okay. We just acknowledge it. Okay. It's acknowledged. Sorry, Darren.
Ms. Levin,
notice and proclamation.
Oh, hold on, Pam is...
Kathy, in the future, can you make sure you just read through them? Because typically that's what we would do, so that we'll know what you're acknowledging.
I read through all petitions.
Basically just say petition of Hunter Douglas, 23 COA, and the address. And you would do that.
So acknowledgement of staff approved petitions.
19, petition of Hunter Dunlap, 219 West 33rd Street. Petition of Ethos Preservation, 217 West Anderson Street. Petition of Design House, 2514 Abercorn Street. Petition of Roof Crafters, 18 Brady Street. Petition of Southeast Roofing Solutions, 1302 Drayton Street. Petition of D. Gray-Jones, 209 East Park Avenue. Moving on, notices, proclamations, and acknowledgments. Is that another acknowledgement?
Oh, yeah. You just, these are for your viewing pleasure.
Okay. Your viewing press pleasure.
And you're
continuing on to other business. Is there any additional business? Okay. And then we are on to adjournments. The next Historic Preservation Commission meeting will be held on April 26, 2023 at 3 o'clock here at Arthur Mendonza Room at 110 East State Street. Is there a motion to adjourn the the March 22nd meeting?
Kirsten Connor, I motion to adjourn.
Pam Miller, I second.
All in favor?
Yay.
Thank you. There's a long one.